the meeting started, our March 10th Historic Preservation Meeting. First off, I just want to welcome our new member, Eric Klein.
Hi, Eric.
Okay, approval of minutes. Do we have a motion to approve the minutes from last month?
I'll move them.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Good morning.
Excuse me, I wanted to add a discussion item for next month. And I was told kind of first at the end and then at this point, so it's just
go ahead.
Yeah, so the formal way to add a discussion item would be for a board member to make a motion and the board to vote to add it to the agenda. If it's not on the agenda prior to the meeting, that is the proper way to do it. So I'm supportive of that. And Barry, did you want to add the discussion to today's agenda or next month?
Next month, I just wanted to read sort of what the discussion item was. So I'd like to make a motion to add an item to April's HPB hearing to seek historic designation both from the city and this federal for the North Beach Bandshell. I would hope that the city could present at next meeting or soon some investigative information, data for the likelihood and effectiveness of obtaining historic designation, City of Miami Beach and the Federal Register for Historic Places. I could read more about it, but that's the gist.
So Steph is more than happy to provide you with some additional information at the April meeting. Back in, I think it was around 2005, we had explored that. I don't have all of the, even though I was here at the time, I don't recall exactly why it didn't move forward for designation, but we do have a lot of background information.
Okay.
So we can bring that back to you for the April meeting.
I would think now is urgent, essential to push that forward if it didn't make it 10 years ago, 15, whatever that was. Hopefully it can move forward now.
So we have a motion on the table. Would any board member like to second
the
motion?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And so that passes. It will be on April's agenda.
And Mr. Vice Chair, before we continue to the regular agenda, I just wanted to swear in the public and read the city's notice regarding lobbyist registration. I'd like to ask anyone who will be testifying today, including members of staff, to raise your right hands. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Thank you. And if you're appearing on behalf of a business, a corporation, or another person, you need to register as a lobbyist with the city clerk's office. If you haven't registered yet, you should go downstairs and register before you speak to the board. You don't have to register as a lobbyist if you're speaking only on behalf of yourself and not any other party, or if you're testifying as an expert witness providing only scientific, technical, or other specialized information or testimony in this public meeting, or if you're appearing as a representative of a neighborhood association without any compensation or reimbursement for your appearance, to express support of or opposition to any item. Expert witnesses and representatives of neighborhood associations shall, prior to appearing, disclose in writing to the city clerk their name, address, and the principal on whose behalf they are communicating. If you're an architect, attorney, or employee representing an applicant or an objector, you must register as a lobbyist. These rules apply whether you're appearing in favor of or against an item or encouraging or arguing against its passage, defeat, modification, or continuance.
Okay, thank you, Nick. So we have an extremely short agenda today. The application HPB file 190338, which was 2115 Washington Avenue, the board heard that several times. The last time was at the January meeting. That application, staff was advised, has been withdrawn by the applicant, so there is no action required of this board. And then we have one regular application, which we will move on to, which is HPB file 190366. This is 6747 to 6757 Collins Avenue. Staff had prepared, I know the board members did receive an email from the applicant, I think early this week or late last week, with a modified front portion of the project, and that was to address the concerns that staff had outlined in our report regarding the lack of active uses buffering the parking portion, which is the lower portion of the building, from the Collins Avenue right-of-way. A little bit of background on this property. It is one of the last vacant oceanfront parcels in the city. I think there's only one other parcel that it remains vacant. This particular site has had several approvals over the past, really since 2005. So over the past 15 years, we've had, I believe, three or four different buildings approved for this site. However, none of those ever went through with their building permit, and obviously none were constructed. The previous projects were residential projects. The applicant today is requesting a hotel development, 11 stories, and I would note as well that both of the previous projects were maxing out the height. The height in this particular location is 200 feet. This particular property, a project, is proposing to go 11 stories, about 107 feet. So it is a larger footprint, but it is a much reduced height. Staff is supportive of the design of the building. It is extremely contextual. It relates in a very strong way to the Deauville Hotel, which is immediately to the south. And we believe it also relates very well to the Sterling, which is a non-contributing building, which is to the north. So we are supportive. The only concern we had, again, was regarding that front portion and the lack of active uses. After discussing our recommendation with the applicant did provide staff and the board with a proposed revised design. That revised design with the entry porch and pedestrian access will satisfy the code requirement for active use. Even though it's not an enclosed space, it does create an active use that is screening the parking. Therefore, they are able to withdraw the variance, which staff is supportive of, and we're also supportive of the proposed revised design. So while our recommendation at the time of the permit plans, or the plans that are submitted to you, was for a continuance to relook at that area, after reviewing the revised design, we are supportive if the board wants to approve that today, with the condition that it be consistent with the exhibit that they are going to present today for the front portion. Obviously, the board has not had the usual time to review this type of change, so I don't want to pressure you into approving something that you may feel you haven't had enough time to review. If you would like more time, we could also continue it to next month's meeting, but staff is comfortable with an approval today, subject to the permit plans being consistent with what they present as Exhibit A.
Okay, so I guess we're going to hear from the applicant now.
Hi, how are you? My name is Jennifer McConney with Studio MCG Architecture at 7500 Northeast 4th Court in Miami. Alfredo is also here today. I think he just went outside for a minute, but he'll be right back. I'm here today with Charlie Porchetto and Diego Colmenero with Urbanica as well. I have a presentation that I'd like to show you, which they'll bring up right now. The site is located in the North Beach Historic District, just south of the Sterling Condominium and north of the Deauville. These are current views of the site now. From there, you're able to see the service area and loading area of the Deauville and the parking area of the Sterling on the north. These are some other views of the site. As Debbie mentioned, we removed the variance that we were requesting. These two images show the original plan that we submitted on the left, which is the one with the variance. We had a landscape berm and ramp that took pedestrians up to the second level. After talking with staff, they were very concerned about the lack of activation along the street. And honestly, after drawing this, it's a much better design. So we agree that, you know, this works much better the image on the right. And so a pedestrian can, or a guest can come to the hotel from the sidewalk and able, and they're able to access an elevator or a stair, which takes you up to the second floor. This is the image of the first design that we submitted. And this is the new image. And honestly, they were right. This is much better. So here you can see there's landscape. There's we have benches, and guests can come easily down that staircase down to the ground floor. It's another image showing some materials. This is the ground floor, which is all parking. We've located all of our parking out of sight and on one level, so there's not a large pedestal. And this allowed us to have our lobby at the second level with great views out to the ocean. We also placed bike parking there because Urbanica's other hotels south of Fifth have a bike sharing program where guests use those bikes. They're branded bikes. They ride them around the beach, so they don't generate a large parking requirement. At the ground level, when a guest arrives, there's a long view corridor out over the pool into the ocean. Most hotels don't get to do that when they have this length of a site. Because we were able to kind of bury our parking, we were able to do this. And really, with a site this deep, you usually have a very disconnected lobby from the ocean. So we thought this is really spectacular kind of entry feature. And what we really want is for the guests to be on this floor. Like in the old hotels on the beach, the public spaces were really where you wanted to be. And so they had small rooms, and they activated the ground level, and that's what we're doing the same. In this section, you can see on the left side where you enter that's the porte cochere at the ground level, and you have a straight view out to the dune and the ocean. Our floors are typical 2 through 10, and what they do is they have different balcony shifts on those levels. So the shifts were kind of inspired by the shifts of the ocean and the shifts of the waves coming in. So they shift 2 degrees on every floor, and then they go back to 90 for 3 floors. And here you can see some of the materials we're using, which are very indigenous to the beach. It's our typical floor. Our penthouse has a pool deck on the west side because our pool and the lower levels on the east, it's going to be in shadow part of the day. So we have a guest-only pool on the rooftop, just a small area. The design of the facade was inspired by MIMO architecture in North Beach of Miami. The use of straight lines, porte cochères, brisolet, pylons, and the brisolet along the garage element are all elements of MIMO, and we brought those elements to this building. This is the view along Collins Avenue. And then we have our view along the ocean. And you can see we're much shorter than the other buildings. It's a more affordable design. This doesn't have to be, a 5-star luxury resort. I think this just makes a, a great hotel, which brings Urbanica's other hotels up to North Beach. And I have our landscape architect here if you have any questions, and I'm sure Alfredo would like to say a few words too.
Good morning. Sorry about that. I needed to make sure I was registered. Fred Gonzalez, for the record, on behalf of BLT Investments LLC, the property owner. And as I guess the first thing I wanted to go over, did the variance get withdrawn? I wanted to officially withdraw the variance. I know that was a point of contention, and we had been working with staff and working with staff. I think.
Did you make the presentation already?
We withdrew the variance, so we're actually asking for support today for approval. And as you know, Urbanica on the beach is going to be another one of the hotels from the Urbanica Hotel Group. Their Argentinian group has projects in Buenos Aires. They have obviously the two properties that are open: the Euclid, the Meridian, that are open south of Fifth. The Fifth, which is called on 5th and, I think it's 5th and Meridian, is under construction. That'll be coming on board soon. So they're really excited to get started and construction and add a hotel product in North Beach. I know North Beach is desperately looking for the redevelopment to start and activations. So we're excited with this hotel product coming in a vacant site that has had over 15 years of approved projects that have not materialized. And out of all the approved projects, this is the most modest. Most of them had been 200 feet in height, and here we're only asking for the 107. So with that, I know that Jennifer went over everything. The owners of the property are here. I wanted to let you know if you have any questions. I wanted to hold off to some rebuttal after public comments to see if you had any questions or if there's any questions I needed to respond to the public.
Before we hear from the public, do any board members have any disclosures to make on this application?
Me.
Okay. What would you like to disclose?
I met with the owners.
Okay.
And I am partial. What more would you like to know?
That's it. Anyone else? Okay.
Okay, I guess we'll open it up to a public comment now.
Hi, my name is Ken Harrison Robbins. I represent Armando and Maritza Gutierrez. They have been a concerned member of this community and been active in historic preservation issues over many years. Down in Day Boulevard, where we successfully opposed a monster hotel being built right across the street from Beach High. They spent a lot of money fighting that project successfully and making a big change, and what they ended up putting there was almost exactly what they had proposed after they had hired architects and did the massing studies and provided that to the opponents. So my clients have a history.
What year was that?
Excuse me?
What year was that?
That was in 2001, I believe, the summer of 2001. Actually, 1999 was the last time they got into a major fight involving protecting their neighborhood. Armando and Maritza own a unit at the Sterling, and they've been active in looking at these projects. Now, they're extremely concerned about this proposed variance, and we understand the variance has been changed. However, those plans were not online, and we did not have an opportunity to review them until today when they were copied. I would like to have an opportunity to show these plans to my client and see whether or not they're supportive. I personally am not an architect, but I know this architect, and she could do a lot better than what she's proposed there. And to drop this on the last minute on the public, banal. I mean, I understand it's better than it was. And to say, oh, because they waived, they decided to withdraw their variance, and they throw another front on it without really giving an opportunity to the public to review what's being proposed is just unfair. We should be getting reasonable notice. To hand this to us at the very last moment and say, oh, well, we withdrew our variance, and look how good a job we did without giving us a chance to even review it, is unfair. So I would request respectfully that this matter be continued to the next hearing to give us an opportunity to review this and discuss it and perhaps even improve this facade. You look at it, it really is plain. This is right next to the famous Deauville Hotel, right across from Norman's in a low-scale facilities and low-scale storefronts. And then you have this large building and this rather, forgetful, banal presentation on the ground level. So I think we can do better. I know this board has always demanded better than that, and 30 days delay will not cause any harm to try to get a lot better from this architect, who I know can do much better work than this. So I'd ask for this matter to be deferred. Thank you.
Any other public comment?
Good morning. I'm on the board of the Sterling. I've lived there for 15 years, have actually two apartments right now, and I'm very happy and pleased with what they have presented. My understanding is that as long as you approve the drawings and there's no variance, there's no objection. Am I not correct to say that? So I just wanted to let you know, he already gave his information of how he feels, but I want to let you know we are two board members here sitting with our property manager, and we are in agreement with this. We got to get this going. I mean, it's affected. DeVille has affected a lot of our area. My apartment has dropped in prices because of such, even though my taxes have not gone down. So in my opinion, creating this kind of a hotel is going to be very good for the neighborhood. Thank you.
And while we're waiting for the public to come up to speak, I'd like to ask the Alfredo if you could, if you have any extra copies of the plans you submitted today, if you could place one on the podium so that the members of the public can see the proposed revisions on the short podium. Oh, okay.
I'm Gabriel Faya. I'm a member of the board of the Sterling, and I'm very pleased to see the plans that are being set forth here, especially considering that the view we have now is that of the DeVille falling apart. We have sections of the walls in that hotel that are totally about to collapse, and anything in there would certainly be an improvement over what we have right now. And this hotel, by the way, looks quite nice. It's a good size, smaller than the prior proposals, and I'm certainly would be very happy to see that being built in there. Thank you.
Is there any more public comment? David.
I'm David McKinney. I live 1020 Meridian Avenue, Miami Beach, and I'm here on behalf of the Miami Design Preservation League. The advocacy committee of the league has reviewed the plans, and we are supportive of it. We do hear the concerns of the gentleman before us about not being and we want to reiterate that we do think it's very important that the public get to view before the meetings any changes. So we understand that. But based on what we've been able to review today, this morning prior to the meeting, we think that it is the design is very strong. We like the contextual aspects of it. We also like that while they were concerned about context, they were also very cognizant of making this a distinct design that also speaks of 2020 and not just of the context. So in overall, we are supportive of this application. We think it's a strong design, but we also just want to reiterate that the public's right to be able to view beforehand is important, and we support that when changes are made that they be that there be sufficient public notice beforehand. Thank you.
Okay. Any more public comment? Okay. I'll close the public meeting, and Alfredo.
It might be helpful, Alfredo, if you start for the record, if you could summarize the changes in the plans.
Sure. We handed out Exhibit A that was sent to the city, and we handed out today to the board. The original plans did not have the required liner use, which is where we were asking for the variance. We had created a walkway entrance. So the changes in the redesign are that the front that was triggering a variance was designed to comply with the code. So the plans that you have now, we had sent it to the city, to Debbie Tack and Michael Belush, and they reviewed and they agreed that we now complied with the code. and we believe it follows the design that otherwise of the building, that everybody was supportive of the design. The only issue we had with the project was the request for the variance, for the most part. So we went and, after getting the staff report, analyzed it and followed the same architectural style, but not requiring a variance. So that's the change. Because of that, applicant has the ability, unlike stated earlier, to withdraw a variance and make corrections on the record. I was able to have time to do plans and present it. There were also some statements, misstatements about the height and the incompatibility of the potential incompatibility of the building. I want to be clear that we're talking that we're proposing a substantially smaller building than is to our south at the Deauville or to the north at the Sterling. So I don't understand how any height could be a concern when the building's only a little over 100 feet high and the other two are approximately close to 200. So we do ask, and we feel that the board has the jurisdiction and the power to review plans at the hearing. We do want the board to consider approving it today. One of the things I know that the residents of the Sterling, the board members that we did talk to, the concern has always been getting this becoming an active site. There's been a vacant site for 20 years at least, and my clients are very anxious to move to the permit stage. They tried working with the previous plans that are still active, but it was so different from the hotel product they wanted. It was a residential 200-foot tower that they decided to scrap that and lose the time to come to the board with a new project. So respectfully, we do request that if the board is supportive of the design, you would approve it today and not continue. Okay. And if you have any questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
Okay. Yeah, I do. I definitely want to hear from the board and just find out kind of how we're looking at the project. But, Debbie, I know we've had some issues like this before where we've had, I don't want to call it a substantial change to the plans, but a change, more than just a paint color or some architectural feature. What do we usually do?
So we're in agreement with several of the speakers that our goal is always to get plans up, any change, even if it's minor, to public view, posted online 30 days before. When an applicant, and this happens reasonably often, is responding directly to a staff concern, not just redesigning it for the sake of redesigning it or changing their mind or doing something, but responding directly to staff's comments, which we outlined in our report. That report is also posted online 30 days or at least 2 weeks before. Then in this case, I didn't consider it a major change. I'm more comfortable with that in terms of the board reviewing that, because that was something that was brought up by staff. And the way they have addressed the comment, and when we weren't sure how they were going to address it, which is why we were recommending a continuance, was just to create an open porch, basically, with elevator and stair access for their active use. They could have also chosen to construct a building portion there, to construct an enclosed piece of architecture closer on that Collins side. That probably, in staff's opinion, would have been a much larger change. We were not sure at the time of writing our report how they were going to respond, which is why we were recommending continuance. So in this case, again, I don't want to pressure the board, because it's not normal that we would review plans at this late of a time for approval. And I understand if the board wants some more time to digest the design. In staff's opinion, this was not a substantial change. This was a change directly related to staff's comment.
Okay, so let's hear from the board. Just how you feel about basically the project and the changes that are proposed. Barry, you want to start?
Sure. Well, I've looked it over. I have a few comments and questions. One thing that I really did appreciate on the design was the beach access on both sides of the property. Currently, I think that the only beach access between 64th Street is 71st Street. And as someone who has spent a lot of time walking on Collins Avenue and feeling like I can't get to my beach. You know, your hotels are and condominiums are blocking my beach. So I do appreciate that on both sides. I did have a question about this pass-through of the lobby, which I think is very dramatic. I agreed with the architect for that. She mentioned that the pool on the roof was private. Does that mean the pool in the back is not? And who can access through there? Who can access through that hotel?
Well, the hotel is not envisioning having an active pool use. It's the pool is open to the hotel guest and their guest. There is a restaurant on the property. Actually, talking to the neighbors to the north, the Sterling, we're very excited at the potential of having a small restaurant
sure.
Right next to their property. I walk the beach walk along there with my wife, and there's very few places that you can walk along the beach walk in that area without going all the way up to Ocean Terrace, where you could stop and have a breakfast or lunch. So,
but who can walk through? Can I walk through from the sidewalk through that dramatic central access to the beach? Or am I relegated? And I'm thinking, and I'm reminded of the project in Surfside, where at the surf club, where they maintained the central corridor of the original surf club, and anybody could walk through there. So it's just a question. It's not a right or a wrong, I guess, maybe.
No,
it's my question.
It's part of the public corridor of the hotel.
Okay.
So like any other hotel on Miami Beach, anyone could walk into the lobby. Now, there are, like every hotel, have restrictions on you can't just go and use the pool if you're not a hotel guest or a spa guest. You know, just
but you
like
gave
you
me
would.
Access on both sides. And,
right.
But
it's not unlike any other hotel along the corridor, whether south or north, that if I walked into the Fontainebleau, I could access a public space. And then, obviously, if I'm going to a venue or have a hotel guest, in that example, I couldn't just use the pool. So
okay. I appreciate it. A couple other things. I really do appreciate the references to the Deauville and the surrounding area in the architecture. There was a comment, and I have these written in no special order here. There was a comment that I picked up on the staff report in reference to the rear yard and FAR. Was that resolved? I thought I read something that staff wasn't convinced that your FAR was correct, but your...
To those comments, our response is that these are our concept drawings, and maybe some tweaks. Well, actually, as we develop the construction drawings, we'll have to make sure we conform. And I typically, at the FAR comment I've seen on many reports, it's something highlighted that the staff says in their review may be an issue, but obviously we need to have the further developed plans. Obviously, we can't submit for building permit any plans that exceed FAR, and that's not the intent.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, expect to have it a permit issued. So that's not the intent.
Okay.
Well, obviously, we'll address those comments as we move to construction drawings.
In reference to the variance and the revised entrance to the hotel, I certainly like the concept of creating a courtyard, creating a resting spot. I think it begins to actually relate to storefronts in a sense. It's a place to walk, some shadow, some shade, so forth. I think it borders on active. But one of the concerns I had was, one, it becoming dark and dingy. The other part was this frosted glass between the street and the parking. How do you resolve that to not look like a building entrance? If I'm walking, you know, two questions with it, really. I'm walking up there, oh, that, there's my entrance, is one. Two, am I going to see parking or big yellow vertical parking bollards behind that glass, sort of like I do at 63rd and Collins at the old Lombardi site? I don't think it's called the Lombardi, but that's the old site, and I see, you know, the cars hanging there. It's kind of cool in a sense, but this is a little different, and the code requirement was to shield that, I think. So that's my question in reference to that, and I did have a landscape question that I noticed, and I read these trees on the street as gumbo limbos, and you know, native, certainly a favorite tree. But when I looked in the plant schedule, I didn't see that. And so were these just image?
Good morning, Christopher Colley, Christopher Colley Landscape Architecture. Thank you so much for the question. The beach is obviously very tough with the wind conditions, and historically we had the royal palms, and for a while the city, you know, has been saying,
look, welcome the shade.
Yeah, we don't want to use palm trees anymore. So on our first submittal, I believe that we had specified pigeon plums, which can do really well here in Collins. They're kind of narrow. It's an FDOT roadway. And then we received a comment from Urban Forestry to use a larger canopy shade tree. And that's when we placed these gumbo limbos here along the front of the street. And if they are not in the plant list, then...
Maybe they are, and I missed them.
Yeah. No, that just looks like a correction that I need to make when we go into CDs. But I would say, for the record, though, that I think that the wind tolerance there is incredibly important, and I, you know, just spent the weekend here at a hotel on the beach, and I think that obviously we would like a little bit of flexibility to work with Urban Forestry to make sure that we have the exact right species mix here so that it stays.
Yeah, you can come really look at nice. The front of my yard.
Yeah,
it's scattered with palm fronds and all sorts of stuff.
So I'll definitely make that correction. Then when we go into
the... And I encourage the gumbo limbos. I love gumbo limbos, but I was concerned about the roots there and that's not my forte, but yours. But
And that is a huge point. And then I would also, I guess I would, along that line, I would mention that for certain, we'll be utilizing the Silva Cell system and the underground rooting systems that are now very typical here in Miami Beach. And so we'll be compliant with all of that, as well as the Atipave, which is a much better system now, I believe. So
that's my main thing, is how that front access gets seen.
Yes, understood. I think that that obviously won't be an entry to the hotel, but I think it will be used a lot. Again, when you go to their hotels, everybody is using bikes. So those bikes are going to be coming out of that door. Also, the ground floor, the way that they have their entries at their other hotels, they're very enlivened. They have, you know, lights and landscaping and trees. It's very homey. I think you'll know where to go. And we're going to need signage. We're going to need a nice wayfinding to say, like, you know, upstairs, check in, something along the lines with what they're doing now. But I think that entry into that garage area, it will be used. I don't think it's going to be a locked door. I think people will be coming in and out of there for the bikes, for valet, etc.
So I'll see cars, and I'm wondering, does that meet the city's requirement? Because I thought the variance
I had kind of the same question. I think that's a very good point. I think, Jennifer, it does meet the city's requirements, but we wouldn't want to see directly into the garage. I think you're proposing a frosted glass. Mm-hmm. Typically, final materials, including physical samples, are brought to staff at time of permit to review. But I would agree that the type of glass should be, you know, reasonably opaque so that you're not looking into to parking areas.
That's not a problem. I don't think we want to see that either. That's fine.
I'm done.
Max.
I don't have a ton to add on this one. Overall supportive of the design and the withdrawing of the variance. The way that I'm processing the public comment is that this project is sort of taking a lot of burden and attention because of the surroundings, so you want to get that streetscape right and have a good pedestrian experience kind of at that level. And I appreciate the clarifications on the landscape. It's an area of that I'm tend to be drawn to as well, so I appreciate that. Interested to hear what the other board members have to say. I'm more inclined to support the continuance and allow some more critical review of the of that first floor redesign.
I've been on this board long enough to have seen the other projects these architects, the owners have done. They're not just planting a hotel, a new hotel, and it happens to sit in a place that is at this moment very difficult because of the next door hotel that is falling apart. And when I saw this coming, I said, first of all, the planners are, to my mind, the most perfect that we have seen come through this board since I've been on it. They are the only ones who have come through with three or four projects where it just went like a song through because they were perfectly done, they are perfectly designed, and the board never had any problem with it. I'm surprised, first of all, that one person is here opposing it. He's opposing it on behalf of two people whom I know well from years ago, but haven't seen them in Miami Beach for as many years. I don't know that they still live here. They might own property here. But they really moved, and they have done great things out west, but not here. So I'm surprised they're the only ones here who are opposing. I didn't quite read the MDPL. It seemed to me that they like the design, but they want to be good citizens. They want to be good citizens, I suppose, and call for a delay. Well, when the project is called for a delay, we should all abide by it, and we always have. I don't remember any time where we've had a project that has been done so well that had to have a delay. The ones that we usually have are projects that need to be returned because there are some terrible flaws that have to be corrected and things that have been left out. And that is not, I hope you're not coming to retract what you're, I mean, that's not the way we work.
No, ma'am. I just
public. Oh, you want to explain?
David, I wanted to.
Was this a last-minute thing that came today?
I just wanted to respond to your question. Yeah,
let us go through.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You can come back.
We'll get back.
You can come back.
Okay.
No, we do support it. Is what I just wanted.
I thought so.
From there, support it.
I would be amazed if you weren't supporting it.
I'm sorry, Scott.
But I think everybody needs to know the history of the group that's doing it. That's one thing. But my second thought is the hotel next door that is destroying the property, the whole block, that whole area, not allowing things to go through. And I'm very impressed that this many people came out to support it. And we only had this one objection. So I don't quite understand that. And I, nevertheless, I just have to add my strong support for this project, because it's going to come up and it'll probably be a better one. Each one that they have done has been great, so, and it just continues. We should be proud to have these developers and these kind of people in this city trying to do something. And the miracle of miracles, they're not even using up all their FAR. How many have we had here who have come trying to stretch their FAR? I don't see any reason that we should be sitting back and telling these people to have to come again. For what? The people could have read it in the newspaper. They could have come here 5 days a week and looked at the plans here. There was no reason for anybody to come here, or a lawyer to come here on behalf of people to object to it. And I can't say enough for the project and the people behind it. I think we'll be very proud. And my last thought on it is that maybe when this starts to happen and they start building, that the city is going to do something stronger to get rid of, not the hotel, the other hotel, but to do something to press them in place. If you stand there, the juxtaposition between I'm blocking on the hotel, the derelict hotel, the DeVille. I blocked that whole thing out of my mind, so I blocked the name. But the DeVille is such a disgrace, and it is so close to what this is going to be. We have, and North Beach. North Beach is begging for new construction of this sort. For all those reasons, first of all, the city. I don't know if the city attorney has any update on what's happening with the DeVille in court, or is it still a stagnant issue, and for how long?
The case remains pending. So I know we've had a couple of hearings, but the litigation's ongoing.
Oh, how long can that go on? Okay, so you have to give credit where credit is due, that a fine developer is willing to come out and take that empty lot and be building something next to this disgrace. Now, I'm not saying that the hotel should be demolished. I'm saying that the owners have to do something. Somebody has to buy it. Somebody's got to do something to complement the fact that we have a new hotel in North Beach, and I'm surprised North Beach people didn't show up to support you. So those are all my hard thoughts about this, and certainly I support that. Let's move on. This is no reason to stand still and make them wait another 30 days or so just because of this complaint.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, can I just respond to two comments from the previous boards that we kind of went fast? I wanted to clarify, Mr. Klein, that we don't have beach accesses on both sides of the property. That's not in our plans.
Sorry. I read it as beach access. What do we have?
It is a narrow lot, so there are no two beach accesses on each side of the property.
You're giving me one?
We have
You're
not
giving me none?
One.
So I have to go to 71st Street or 64th Street.
You go one block over on either side. On the other side of the Deauville, there's a public park that has access.
That's 64th Street.
And
Deauville's on 67th.
But the plan says walkway on that level. Can you clarify what that means on both sides?
And I was very confused by the elevations or the perspective.
I mean, there's a walkway on either side in the setbacks. So those are for fire access and fire egress. There's no public boardwalk access there. But, you know, again, if you're, as any, you know, public can, you know, come and see the front of the hotel, but I don't think they're, you know, inviting guests on the property to the beach. But there's walkways there.
I would like to see beach access on one or both sides of that with a sign like that's there by the, I'm sorry if that disturbs, you know, me coming to my beach and your apartment building or condo happens to be on my beach. But as is done at the bath club, there's a sign that says beach access. There's about 12 feet from side to side. There's a 4-foot path, and it's landscaped, and it's very minimal, and it just has a little sign that says beach access.
And I actually use that one once in a while. I'm aware of it. In the bath club is a whole different set of conditions. I mean, the city was very strong in requesting beach access in that corridor because there was no public access.
And I feel it's very important to have public access to our public beach.
No, and Mr. Klein, I agree with you. Because of the width of this lot is not as a large expansive lot like the bath club or some other lots. And there is reasonable access to the beach just immediately north after the Carillon, because you have the Sterling and then the Carillon, and the street end with the big opening the city.
At the Carillon, there is at 69th Street. There's beach access there.
So you have a whole street end and an opening for the beach access and the beach walk. And then to the south, just past the Deauville, you have a park where there's also parking. So
I don't mean to cut you off, but let me ask you, the architect, how wide is that? And if it's there for fire access, why couldn't it be dual-purposed for the public to get to the public beach?
So we have 10 feet on either side of the pedestal. It's not wide enough for a fire truck. It's not a fire truck access. It's for people to get out of the building and then back out to the street.
Cool.
So
well, if it's wide enough for them, it's wide enough for the rest of us, right?
Mr. Klein, I will tell you that typically, and I've worked on multiple projects, some have had beach access. The city usually requires an easement. They're buffered out. So whether you look at the bath club has one, the Mai just down the way also has one.
A very narrow site, I might add.
But it's actually a wider site. And there was an easement, and there's a division between the building and the building access.
So if we have an easement, why can't we walk on an easement? What's the argument? Why don't you want to do it?
Yep.
What's the argument? Why don't you want to be a good public citizen?
Well, we are a good public servant. I mean, if there's enough risk
the same
to provide
from people about the Baywalk, you know, when we put buildings on the bay, that you then block it there. I don't understand what the...
I would believe there's reasonable access already.
I just want to chime in. I'd like to chime in for a second. I think if the applicant wanted to proffer the sort of public amenity that Mr. Klein is referring to, that's a different story than the board compelling an applicant to dedicate a portion of private property for public use. So I just want to caution the board, you know, you're kind of wading towards territory where you're asking or potentially requiring a private applicant to give up a portion of their property. So there may be areas where the property owner is willing to work with the board, there may be other concessions that the property owner is willing to make with regard to public access, but I would not recommend that the board require that.
I'd like to just add from... I live on Collins Avenue now, and if you who know Collins Avenue, you can't get across anything to get to the beach. It's either blocked or locked or whatever. But when the newer properties came online, the people in that neighborhood pressed the city that they wanted to have beach access. Each time it was a very bitter fight between them. The owners
not
and the
fine.
Other. But I would like to hear from the owners of the property, if they have a reason that there is no access, because that is a coming trend up on Collins. And it's working because we have now two new ones, and as new things come along, they will probably be asked. So I don't understand why they wouldn't do it.
Good. And I also want Jennifer to respond architecturally, the issues with our setbacks. If we could shift the building over one way and create a wider path that would meet the parameters for the city, that's one thing. But we're at the setback, so any shifting in the building will trigger a variance. We wouldn't be looking to...
On both sides, it's that way?
Well, whatever side we shift the building. If we shifted the building north to allow...
I wasn't suggesting, and I'm not playing architect here, and I wasn't an urban planner or anything, but you told me there was a 10-foot setback. I read, it's foolish me, that and when it said walkway, that it went from one end to the other. And if there's a 10-foot setback, why couldn't there be a 3-foot-wide paved pathway in there with some lighting?
So on the south side, which is where the Deauville has their loading and we have our loading, that would be where, well, let me start on the north side. On the north side, we have our neighbors, a large condominium to the north. They're probably not going to want beach access on our north side, which is where people would be coming in from the public and walking down by their units and out to the beach. On the south side, we have their loading, Deauville's loading, which is massive with generators and loading trucks when it's functioning hotel. And then our loading trucks, our access to the kitchen, our back of house, all of that is all on the south side. That would be where maybe we could put public access, but I don't think that's a very nice place to put public access. So we've never even, you know, usually we're not asked to put public access on these kind of properties because Miami Beach has done such a great job at their street ends now. So, I mean, we're willing to look at it, but I don't know if it's a good solution.
And I understand what you mentioned about the, 57 Collins, the whole debate about the beach walk and the bath club. That area is more distinguished because there you had about 6 blocks where there was zero access. I represented the owners who developed the Mai years ago. And at that time, the city, the bath club had one access, and it was a very large lot, and the city asked for us to offer a beach walk access because there were none. And when you walked in that area, you didn't have a street end for till you get to this fire station in the 50s, the 53rd fire station. So you had this very long portion where there was zero access, and you had the west side of the street lined with condominiums and residents who had no way of getting to the beach. So I understand.
But that they made one south. Where is it?
At my has one at right there at 59th. There's my
That's
put
right.
one in.
That's right.
I know they went back and
forth. The new project that's going up,
where the Barbaro House used to be, which was more than a double lot, very wide lot, and they were able to accommodate something there because of the width.
So back to my original question, as it relates to the surf club, the Richard Meyer building renovation, What about that central access?
You're asking about the Surfside and the Four Seasons.
I'm really asking about your project. And if can I walk through your hotel unobstructively without being stopped with my cooler and my bathing suit and my surfboard in my hand, as we see a surfer on the rendering? Can he walk through your hotel, or he has to carry that north of the Carillon?
I'll ask the owners, but I would probably say no, because as any hotel, you
wonder
try
why
doing
you
that,
put him there.
It's every hotel along the beach has that same condition. You can't just show up with your coolers and your surfboard and walk through the Lowe's to access their guest pool to then get to the beach.
They can at the surf club.
They could go through the pool?
Yeah, they can go through original central part of the building.
And they're allowed to access the beach?
The city of Surfside
required that because...
They're 1,000 feet wide?
Because of the width of that property. And that might have been a condition of whatever approval they have.
I'm just saying you have a guy walk in a wetsuit, walking with a surfboard on Collins Avenue, and you know he's got to go walking north of the Carillon or down to 64th Street. It's almost like false advertisement. And I saw that, and I actually wrote on here. Where's this guy going to the beach?
He's staying at the hotel.
And then I realized, oh wow, you got those walkways. That's cool. Thank you. So I
think it's a trend that's going to happen as Collins Avenue changes, the makeup of Collins Avenue. It has changed. It has children now. It has young people, and they have people who. My children who are old children, but they never would go to the beach until that opening happened at 50, wherever it is. But I think that within the next 5 years, there are going to be more entryways. But that's up to the owners. I understand it, but I don't understand with such a fabulous record that they have and a wonderful project. I hate to even see us bickering over it for a pathway, but it is important.
And we understand that it is important. And if the site was wider, it'd be easier to accommodate. I mean, at one point, I assume the DeVille would come to this board, and the DeVille is like almost a city block wide, that there may be something there whenever they, but...
Well, that's not
because
now.
Of the. I understand it's for you right now, but again, the intent is not to have access to every single property. If you could, that would be great.
I would disagree.
The city has had requested beach access, and that's not a new trend. I mean, I did the MI back in 2006, I think it was, or 2005, when we did that project. The city, and it wasn't the first beach walk. The bath club before it had one, and I understand that middle beach corridor. Has a very long stretch where there is no beach access and there are no street ends.
Well,
but the conditions here are substantially different.
How big a space do you need for two people to walk down to the beach?
I think you would need the whole set. I mean, you only need a 44-inch wide walkway, but it needs to be landscaped and lit, and it's 333 feet. And it's also keeping that secure. What happens in that 333 feet where, next to the parking? So, we also want to be cognizant of that as well.
Because if you look
how
at the
other
ones
places that, do it?
Huh?
I don't want to get
lots.
Into this urban planning issue, but, you mentioned the, or I mentioned the bath club. It's a very narrow little path. It's got some some bollard lighting,
and they could close it in the evenings. I mean, I don't know what they choose to. Actually, most of those are only like the beach is only open sunrise and sunset. So
there's no I don't think there's a gate.
I know the MI when this board approved it, had hours of operations. Now, if the condominium association decided that the cost of closing and opening was too much of a headache.
afterwards, that's a whole different thing. You know, that's an administrative side. But I can tell you that there are hours. And again, the bath club is a substantially wide site. They could have accommodated numerous beach walks. They could have had one on each side of the property, and they had more.
That walkway is no more than 12 feet.
I understand. But, it's a divided walkway where it has walls, and the city approved it. There's a security concern as well.
And some people raise their issue. I think we're beating a dead horse, and, you know,
well,
I don't want to take.
I feel like I'm beating it too, but I think I'll go back to the last one that was done, and the new one that's going up where the building fell down, the new one, the residents along there were the ones who beat on it until it happened. It became a selling point for the property. So it wasn't just that the people sat back and I saw somebody shaking their head there that they would prefer not to have a walkway, but it's a day and an age that is coming. There are going to be more changes on Collins.
Okay. We had to fight for the North Beach Recreational Corridor, and I certainly fought hard
okay.
for that.
Okay, let's, Rick,
and this would connect.
The comments.
Okay, yes, if I may, thank you. I've heard nothing but great things about Refinica, and so I imagine the neighbors are really excited to have them coming to the neighborhood, and I appreciate the owners being here. Thank you. And I think part of what's exciting about them is the focus on the pedestrian and the bicycle, you know, which is great for the city, for the neighborhood, for the streetscape. Sorry about that. And I see there, on this parking plan, there are lots of bicycles here. And so I just wanted to ask for some clarification on how they're accessed. It's not quite clear. I read it like some of the bicycles might be accessed from that side space, but I heard you mention, Jennifer, that they actually come through the parking lot and out that front glass door. Is that right?
Well, the valet would take the bikes out. I don't think we want people guests in there. Yeah, but I think the valet will be taking the bikes out through there, through the front.
And it looks like the bicycles on the north side are longer than the bicycles on the south side. Are those like tandem bikes?
They're I believe they're upright. So probably some are standing up.
Okay.
Yeah, they're just shown differently.
Okay, so then presumably that glass door up front, it's going to be very busy, and the bench is there. People will be waiting for the valet to bring their car or their bike.
Yes.
So that door will be open and closed quite a bit. I know Debbie mentioned some concern for looking into that parking space at the time when the door is open. If there's a lot of in and out, there might be something to consider reducing that visibility. I really appreciate the... the design of the hotel, having that open breezeway, that spine, they look like large oversized doors at either end of it. I imagine they're going to be open a lot of the time. It's rendered that way. And so I did want to ask about, now looking at these new drawings that came to us this morning, so we're just now seeing them, but I wonder if you could tell us what there's this line here, and I don't know if that is just part of the way that it's rendered, or if they're suggesting that it's a different material there.
I think that's a lower, that canopy in the front is lower.
It is?
So that's the edge of that, yeah.
So that drops down there?
Mm-hmm. And then there's another canopy above that for the cars. So there's a entry. So
this here, this is a, so I was reading it like this ceiling from the breezeway would be flush out to here, but no, it drops.
It's, you're seeing the ceiling beyond. That ceiling in the back is a little bit higher. So the ceiling of the porco share is higher than the ceiling of that front canopy. I have it on the section. Let's see.
You want full drawings?
It's in the, it's on the presentation. I think if we...
Oh, okay.
Yep. Can we go back to the presentation? Here you go.
You see there's a lower canopy and then there's an upper canopy. Can you see? I know it's kind of small, but there's a at the lower level on the left. That's the lower canopy that you're talking about, and then there's a higher ceiling where the porte cochere is. I wish I could point to it, but this doesn't let you.
What sheet is that? A4?
It's actually the new section A400.
Because when I look at A400, it looks like the ceiling of the breezeway is flush out through the porte cochere.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
That's a new canopy that we added for the new facade, for the new front design.
Okay, so that's part of the what's been adjusted here.
But the new the breezeway is flush all the way through to the underside of the second floor.
Okay. Well, if there was any comment I would make, and I think this is all like, you know, maybe there's a level of refinement that's yet to come here, and which is I believe something that you and the staff can work out.
Yeah.
That the, you know, that great breezeway, you know, when it comes down to that new stair that we're seeing this morning for the first time, I wonder if that stair could be more kind of welcoming from the street. I don't know if it's wider or it turns out to the street more, mm-hmm. so that great gesture really makes it down to the sidewalk. And I think it really kind of tie the spirit of that central design together.
Okay.
So I'm okay with it. I do think that maybe there is... You know, this is happening quickly, and we're seeing it for the first time. And, you know, hopefully there's another layer of refinement here that you guys can address with the staff.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Well, there's a lot of good comments that have been made already. And so I'll probably double back to a couple of them. But first off, you know, I think the building is done in a really sensitive way. You know, design-wise, I really like the way that it relates to the Deauville and it's not overpowering. A couple of points, which again, you know, a lot of this has been said before. I really love the central breezeway idea too. The view corridor, I think, is fantastic. And, you know, it's hard to see from the plans how that will really be experienced in terms of sight lines, but it's a great idea, and I hope, you know, I hope that it is a prominent feature that gets to be enjoyed. So a couple of touching back on some things that have already been stated by my colleagues, you know, as a North Beacher, you know, this is, again, it's one of those neighborhoods, you know, it's had its ups and downs. You know, it's got some great vibrancy and certainly did when the Deauville was up and functioning. And I think that it has great potential to continue to become more vibrant and to thrive in that way. I really appreciated what Barry brought up because I think that's a perspective that, you know, just in looking at the design, I don't know where we go with this, but, you know, he was mentioning the street experience. As a North Beacher, I can mention the beach experience and going down the beach walk. And it's true, you know, for North Beach, which is generally, you know, very pedestrian-friendly, very exploration-friendly, this area on the beach path, it's not great. You know, it's not great that there is a desert with no access to any commercial services, amenities, restrooms, anything from the Carillon down to the park south of the Bel Air. And I think it's a great opportunity. I think it would be a great opportunity that not only you know, obviously serves pedestrians and, you know, people that are experiencing this area of North Beach, but there's also an interplay, I think, between that pocket of the community doing well. And to do well, you know, I mean, the beach is certainly our greatest natural asset, and you have, you know, a lot of commercial vendors who have not been doing great since the Deauville closed, and to open up that access between that commercial corridor and the beach, I think, would serve that community really well. I understand also what our attorney stated in terms of, you know, demanding things. You know, it's a proffer I would love to see. And maybe I'll circle back to that. The trees on the front, you know, we touched on those as well. I think it's really important. I think it's a big improvement, the changes that have been made based on staff's input. You know, I understand that wind is an issue there as well. I'm happy that the urban forester is advocating for trees that would make the front of this building more inviting for people to hang out and enjoy. I'm not sure I want to leave it just up in the air. I think a gumbo limbo, probably going from palms to gumbo limbos, is a better choice. There might be even better ones in terms of providing canopy and wind strength. I don't want to see it go backwards, and I don't know how we ensure that based on the fact that it's kind of ambiguous in the plans. You know, I would want to see a wind-strong native canopy tree that's a gumbo limbo or stronger and bigger, like a green buttonwood. So, I'm not sure, since it's not really stated in the plans, how you lock that in where we don't go backwards, because I think for the public enjoyment of this space, I think these trees, even though there aren't a lot of them, I think makes them very crucial that they be, you know, good size, good specimens, and that they're properly maintained and will do well in those conditions.
The urban forester does now review the building permits so that we have that extra layer of landscape review. So we will ensure that.
And we'll per offer, I'll have the landscaper respond to your request.
Sure. Just taking all this in, you know, what I think would be a great choice is really nice specimen sea grape trees would be gorgeous. Gorgeous structure, completely wind tolerant, native to Florida. You know, I mean, I think we can utilize that as we start getting right into our property. In terms of the actual street tree that's in the public right-of-way there, that's basically going to be up to our urban forestry department as to what they feel most comfortable with. And you know, if we're getting specific about the trees, my only thing with the gumbo limbos is that you know, if you go up and down the beach right now and you see what's happening, it's like there's not too many things that'll just seem to do well all the time in this environment. And I want a sure thing here, which is why we had picked the pigeon plums off the start. But if you, you know, give us the flexibility to work with the urban forestry department, and then if, you know, if we can proffer the idea that we'll put some really nice, like, I like the sea grapes, what I'm trying to say, if we can use those as an accent within the new design in our front yard area, I think that could be really nice. Jennifer?
Yeah,
that would work really well, I believe. So hopefully that helps clarify it, and definitely we will be developing this as we continue forward. Okay. Does that help address that at all, sir, or?
It helps. I mean, again, I want, you know, sea grapes, again, there are tiny little puny sea grapes, and there's big canopy sea grapes. And I think, I mean, from my knowledge of trees, you know, I think it's kind of in the way that they're pruned, obviously.
Sure.
You would have to build some height on a sea grape tree to get it where it was inviting.
Yeah.
With a large enough canopy, whereas, you know, in beach conditions, they generally tend to go low and
horizontal. I mean, I can say that for certain, I agree with you. There's a big difference between a 12-foot height small tree that looks like it just came out of a nursery and, let's say, a 14, 16-foot height sculptural-type tree. We just were fortunate recently to be involved with another hotel here in Miami Beach, and on the pool deck we used a really nice sea grape tree. We brought a specimen sea grape tree, which is probably 20 feet tall, and it made a huge impact, and it was absolutely gorgeous. So from our point of view, we want to do the absolute best for Miami Beach and the best to represent the, you know, the vibe of the project and the vibe of naturalism and reinforcing the, you know, the history and the natural environment. So I guarantee you that we'll give it our 100 best shot.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
So I want to circle back now, and Alfredo, you first mentioned this, and I want to restate, you know, yes, this area of North Beach, particularly with what's happened to the Doleville, to have, you know, a lot that's been sitting vacant for a long time, that has a lot of commercial surroundings that are wanting to serve hotel guests that are not currently there. I think this is a very welcome, a very welcome project for this neighborhood. And as a North Beacher, once again, I'm very much looking forward to it. Having said that, though, I want to go back to these changes because there hasn't been a lot of time. And, you know, I have a lot of perspectives because I pass the area all the time. Can I ask staff, I don't know, I guess Debbie stepped away. How long are these plans currently online, these changes? Are they currently on the city's site or no?
I don't believe they are.
So to me, even though, you know, I have great strength and familiarity with this neighborhood, very much so. Again, even having used the Deauville to host events when it was open. But I think it's really presumptuous, and it concerns me to move forward with changes that, you know, I think the way that this hotel relates to the street is important. And I think, these are public hearings, and they're the one opportunity that generally the public would have to come and make recommendations. And from my mind, in terms of the design of this project, there's nothing within me that would want to oppose this project. And at the same time, I think often the public comes forward with thoughts and perspectives that a board may not have considered. And I'm concerned with squashing that opportunity without, you know, giving a member of the public the opportunity, even if it was posted at 10 in the morning yesterday and they had last night to run in and look at it and send us an email. I'm not sure. I think it's right as a process to make changes, particularly to the way that a building relates to the street specifically, without giving the public an opportunity to make their comments and make any recommendations or suggestions. I think that's part of what we're here for. And lastly, I want to circle all the way back around to the idea of a beach path, because I already know that that would be an amenity that would serve the community very widely. And, I don't want to put anybody on the spot, but, you know, if we could walk out the door with a win like that for the community as a whole, to me, as a proffer to move forward, I'm sorry to say I would consider it, because I know it's greatly needed. So thank you very much. And again, beautiful project, and very, very much looking forward to supporting it, whether it's now or through a continuation. Thank you.
Can I ask you, is there a way that you can work with the owners about this beach walk so that this doesn't go on forever and we get a real position on
it? We can have discussions with the owner and the applicant, but as Mr. Claire just stated earlier, we don't have the authority to require them.
No, not to require. So. That they would, maybe you can find a solution that would work, that maybe is being overlooked, and then perhaps. The other thing I don't understand, Kirk, we have the public here who was interested. If these people knew to come, I don't know where all the rest of them are.
Again, you know, I think it's only fair that the public have an opportunity to see what we're going to be looking at. And from what I understand, the current plans for the design as they relate to the street are not even posted online. So even if they wanted to pull them up now, they can't. And to me, that's not right.
DPO figured it out. They came. They figured it out. The people who normally come are the people who live in place. And MDPL, I think if we're going to sit here and hold up this project, because we don't have enough people in the audience, I don't get it. We have the people from, I'm sure that their whole building is in support of it and are probably working. And so those are the two things. We're like fishing for things to hold back on this project.
I think for us as a board, you know, you're setting up this expectation of due process. If I look at a project the night before and I'm going to work for another board, and I would project the same for any resident, that they would hope that what they were looking at were the plans that were actually going to be presented, not something that was just handed in to the desk. And the next thing you know, the whole, as it influences them, because, you know, they're not living in this hotel. It relates to the users of the streetscape. Right. And to me, you know, I'm not sure I think that's fair.
I don't think it's fair. This is how we operate. This is how it has happened. I'm sure there are other projects that have come through here 14 times that people didn't come back each time to see it. So we're having a first class operation here, and we're kicking it down a month or two, who knows how long.
I am not denying anything that you're saying. It's a first class, absolutely, extremely welcome to North Beach. My question pertains to
having
the process.
I understand
and accessibility
what you're saying,
to public participation has nothing to do. And I hate that it's a North Beach project, because no one could be more excited.
That is the most important.
I would be, but at the same time, we're talking about possibly delaying 1 month to possibly get some input that would make the project better, perhaps, and maybe it wouldn't, and all we would have lost is a month. I'm not sure I understand the argument for circumvening that.
Alfredo, did you want to say something?
I wanted to clarify the record that there has been due process. So I know there's, Mr. Pesca, I want to be very clear that there has been due process. This board has the ability and has always allowed for non-substantial changes where applicants bring, and this board routinely approves it almost every month. There's some tweaks, there's a change. A lot of them are directed from staff reports that come out the week before the hearing, and we try to address those comments, and there are changes. Now, there are times there are substantial changes that staff from the get-go will tell you, no, these changes are substantial, we don't have time to review them, we cannot hear them that same day. So there is a due process. And quite frankly, this is an improvement. And it was noticed, and you have residents who came. Other residents could have come if they didn't like, I mean, let's face it, the original submittal had less of an inviting opening to the sidewalk. So we're improving. So if people didn't feel compelled to come to object to that entrance, no. I mean, they had the. You're asking about due process. We do have residents who are here.
Yeah, maybe that wasn't the word I intended to use. Again, it's about access, and maybe this is a good time for me to ask for clarification. You know, could this not have been posted like three days ago?
Okay, so
how does that work?
Planning Department does try to avoid this situation all the time. If you can imagine, if we accepted new plans or significant changes to plans at a late minute, that would happen with all applications, right? Everyone, you know, architects are working, you know, through the entire night. They'd be preparing new things to present. We will not post anything online, nor will we put it in the official record that is received after that 31 days. The 31 days is the official plan of record that we have in the department and available to the public. The board in the past, and this is a, maybe we could even do this as a discussion item at some point, has allowed for applicants to present refined, modified designs. Pretty much across the board that has been done in the past 10 years. There are times where they will adopt those changes on the dais. There are other times where the board thinks that the changes are too significant and they want it back either the next month or in 2 months. It's more often that the board, if they're inclined to approve the project, accepts those changes, which creates difficulty. It also creates an issue with public access to those plans. In this particular case, because it was in direct response to staff's comment, it was only in direct response to staff's comments. They did not propose an additional floor or a change in the footprint or a change in the site plan other than that front portion that staff had recommended. We felt comfortable with it. But again, it is currently not part of the official record. That official record kind of closes at the 31 days. In this case, because it was requested by staff that this be done, not that the new plans be submitted today, but that these changes be made, I'm comfortable with it. There are other times where architects will present things that staff hasn't seen, that staff didn't recommend, that we are, in my opinion, is a little more unfair to the board and to staff to try to figure out what exactly is being proposed. But nonetheless, the board has consistently allowed that and has accepted those things. If we want to talk, you know, I think maybe at some other point we could talk about kind of the rules of the board and the general policies of what that will help staff advise the applicants, you know, no, you cannot present anything new and that type of thing. It's really staff just trying to keep things moving, not delay things unnecessarily, and also, you know, follow the board's direction.
But it is a significant design change for the entrance of the building. That, I think, nobody here could argue.
I have one more question.
Excuse me. How is it?
Can I ask a question?
Away the foliage.
Right. It took away 250 feet of ramp, and it severely, significantly changed it. I'm not saying in a negative way. I think it enhanced it. I'm just saying that the enhancement was, to me, a significant change at the pedestrian level. Kirk.
Go ahead.
Again, you know, I wanted to touch back on this pathway. I mean, because everyone's here, this discussion is happening. The attorney mentioned it as a proffer, but Alfredo, I think this came up in the discussion, and in terms of if you minimized the ask of providing, and it sounds to me, Jennifer, I think you were mentioning, which I don't understand this with the path. To me, you have a load-in area to the south of the building. To the north, if you were to discuss a possible access for the general public, you mentioned something about that the pathway looking into apartments, but the way I saw the plans is they would be looking into a parking garage, right? Well, if you had just an easement section for pedestrians to the north of the building. I mean, is that something that we can even discuss, or it's something that the property owners are just opposed to? And then I'll drop it and we'll move on.
We believe the lot's narrow, and we don't want to create, I mean, you may want to hear from the impacted parties, the Sterling to the north, if they want the beach access on the north side. We do still think that there's a very narrow lot, and there are requirements of the city of the width and landscaping, not just the bare minimum. I've worked on beach walks before on other projects. There are minimal dimensions. Yes, the city likes that to be, you know, some of them curved to create, but there's also division between that and the property. Here we're talking in the 10-foot setback that we're using for egress, for emergency exits, that we can't block. But I would ask the board to talk to also, you know, to hear from the, I think one of the board members are wanting to mention something.
I just remember the battles for the North Beach Recreational Corridor. And I remember coming to a commission meeting after what I felt was kind of late, maybe 9:30 at night or so, and having to say that I'm sorry that the back of your house is on the front of my beach. And I know that our previous governor made some changes to beach property, but I still think of it as my beach. As a kid, I've been thrown out of every hotel on Miami Beach for making my way through their hotel to the beach. And be a good citizen.
And
we had the same arguments with people saying, I don't want a sidewalk behind my house, behind my building.
And we're activating.
And didn't the city stop the beach walk for one of the hotels and then the Fairmont? I can't remember, and then finally came back and built it after a failed lawsuit.
That was on the Baywalk. But I will tell you that this property is activating North Beach because I know part of the comments have come back that you have the beach walk where there's no activations. It's a barren walk. Obviously, look, I live on 58th, so I know it's all residential buildings. So I walk, and there's nothing there. There are some beach accesses that have been one that I was part of.
They don't even have a tree, so that you can't walk without.
Something. Yes, I've done that. I've walked down south, so I know what you're talking about, Nancy. But what I'm saying is, here we're adding a hotel. We're bringing a hotel to North Beach, to this area where you have the DeVille that's closed currently, and you know hopefully one day it'll reopen and there'll be amenities there that as you come off the beach walk and go to a restaurant, go to a bar, you know, things you could activate the beach walk. Immediately to the south you have the Sherry Frontenac, and that property has always been a hotel that's operated really for airline personnel. I remember calling there one time and asking about their restaurant. They're like, how do you get this number? I go, 411, when they use 411. But, I mean, so here we are trying to activate. Is it, if the site was larger, we could accommodate a beach walk. And I know that the bath club did and some properties, but the issues that the bath club had and the Mai, for example, that I worked on, and 5700, whatever I think it's called, 5700, those three projects, that area is a very long stretch where there is no access. And you had the residents on the other side request it. We haven't had anyone raise that issue. So, and if we had a wider site, it'd be easier to accommodate. I understand that in a perfect world, you want every 100 feet an access or whatever, you know, reasonable. We believe there is enough access to the beach.
But you do have the walkway anyway, correct?
Yeah,
I mean, the walkway is there.
It's
and it needs to be open for fire, correct, for easement. So why not just design it so it could be open? Just a question.
Okay. There's security issues as well.
Let me make a few comments, and then we'll I do have a question for staff. Let me go on, and then we may get back to some comments. I do like overall. I like the design of the building, the nice modern or contemporary look. There are basically two issues that I see. One being the public beach access, and the other one being the changes to the front. As far as the beach access, you know, even Nancy said that, you know, that seems to be the direction the city is going to try to push for that as often as the city can. I personally would like to see something there. You do have a walkway on either side already. I know it's for egress and things like that. And, you know, when asked why you don't want to use it for public access, the only answer is possibly security issues. You know, I think if you can figure something out there, I think that would go a long way toward getting this project approved. The other issue is being the front, the design change in the front. When I saw what you originally proposed, I thought it was novel, interesting. But of course, as Jennifer said, when, you know, the second design, I liked even better. So I do like that design. The issue is the timing of that. You know, I've heard arguments on both sides where you know, anyone who is interested should be here to comment on it. But, you know, going back to the timing, my question, Debbie, is if The applicant came to us today without this new design, and they are still requesting the variance. And they got the impression that this board was not going to approve that. We didn't, and they didn't like the design. And they took a few minutes and, I want to say, maybe sketched out something similar to what they put here, or actually drew it up or described it in detail. I said, this is what we're going to do. What would you recommend as far as voting on a den, or would you recommend they come back with more detailed drawings?
So at that point, if they didn't have, you know, a prepared plan of the change, we would recommend it be continued, which is what our initial recommendation was. Not knowing, you know, there's a lot of different options in terms of how they could create active space. That's why the report that's in front of you raises the concern about the active use and is recommending continuance, because at the time of writing this report, we didn't know if the applicant was going to agree with staff or try to obtain the variance, or if they did agree with staff, how they were going to redesign it. Looking at the plans submitted for the redesign of it, we think it's an improvement. It does address staff's comments. And while we're comfortable with the board approving it, with the Exhibit A very clearly noted in your approval, so that it would be substantially consistent with this, I understand that the board may feel rushed or have some concerns about approving it with plans that were not submitted with the original application. So, you know, I'm really going to defer to the board. I can tell you that while this is not something that staff encourages, in this particular case, I'm comfortable working with them administratively as long as it's consistent with the Exhibit A at building permit. But it's up to the board, and you know, your decision on whether or not you need more time is completely up to you, and it's understandable if you do.
And can I add something? We have a long history of working with staff, with Debbie, and I know we could, you know, if there's any refinements that need to be made to the stair, I don't know if waiting a month is going to change very much. I mean, it's just more paper, more in what would be the outcome. It would be working with staff. So, I mean, I think this is a great project, and I don't really see why waiting another month. When we have neighbors here. I mean, they came, and they like it. So I don't know, you know, what the difference would be if we did get continued.
Well, that's not the only issue. There's also the public beach access. So,
I've seen beach access requested when there's variances, when there's neighbor issues, when there's, you know, and nobody's requesting it. The neighbors have been notified. The neighbors next door aren't asking for it. If we provide it, that might upset people. So there's nobody here asking for it.
And I just wanted to add that the beach walks, he's going to ask for it now, obviously, but... But here's
Armando Gutierrez would like to have a beach walk and encourages that as far as he encourages board and the
we're going to get into.
And where does he live? Let's just hear where he lives.
He doesn't live there. We live there.
Mr.
Exactly. This is the board.
Mr. Chair.
Two board members.
Let's
try and keep control of the hearing. And anytime we reopen, obviously the applicant should have the opportunity to rebut. So I'd like us to keep the public hearing under control.
For the record, I just wanted to clarify that if you look at the beach walks that you do have that have been approved by this board, regardless of which ones you want to look at, they're typically separated easements, walled off, some kind of security, some kind of fencing between that and the private property. It's not all interconnected where you walk out and it's easy for people to walk in. And for security reasons at a hotel, you need that division. And you have that at the Mai. They don't just go out the side of their building right into the beach, to that beach access. That's fenced in. So is the bath club. They're cordoned off quarters, and it's very clear where the access is. And then on the other side of the fence, the wall, whatever they have, they have their egress corridors for their property. So it's not, they're not intermingled for the most part. I haven't seen one that is blended together as you're suggesting. So, and we would have a concern of having easy way to access the hotel for security purposes.
And there's a restaurant in the back, which is open to not just guests. So when you want to come in and have a drink and then go to the pool and go to the beach, you're able to do that. I mean, it's not like there's not going to be a bouncer at the front door not letting people in. It's an open hotel.
I was specifically told I couldn't come through with my bathing suit and cooler through your hotel.
Well, you were, Mr. Klein, as any hotel in the city would do, if someone just from the public wanted to use it as a walkthrough and not patronize the property, they would, at different levels, they'd be blocking.
We're like really beating the horse, and I hear you over and over with the same argument. I hear it.
All right. I think at this point we should just get a feel for how the board's going to vote. I don't know if we want to put forth a motion for a continuance or put forth a motion to approve the project. I'll open it up and see if...
I think it'll be easier if you just try for an acceptance or a rejection. At least it's not wasting more time.
You want to make that motion, Nancy?
Yes. Hey, but I move to approve the project.
Is there a second?
I mean, I feel like you're forcing somebody to not favor the project when it's clear that everybody on the board does. Are just asking for certain conditions. So to me, the better motion would be to continue it.
Well, my motion is on the floor.
I mean, unless there's some sort of proffer on the table that's...
There's a motion now to approve it. I didn't hear a second.
No second? Well,
okay, so...
I mean, it seems to me the appetite is to approve. We just want some adjustments. I mean, if there were... A proffer based on some of the things we discussed, I'd be open to seconding the motion. But without that, I feel like there's too many considerations that are up in the air.
I believe that the project speaks for itself, what it's going to do for North Beach and the rest of the city. All of that is much more important than having another meeting just to see how many people are going to show up to have other thoughts. We have all expressed our thoughts. Some are good thoughts, some are simple thoughts, and I think that the staff is able to take care of figuring out how there can be a passageway. The one that was built, I believe, up in the newest one that was put in, is only about 10 feet. We're not asking for a lane to drive a bus through.
But
we're
asking, Nancy, they're not agreeing to work with staff for the beach
access.
They
don't want to work with, so who doesn't want to work with
the applicant.
Staff?
They're not agreeing to that.
Is that so? I guess then they're going to have to suffer a comeback and do this all over again.
For the record, there was a suggestion that there are many open issues. The only open issue I see is the beach walk, and our issues are going to be the same next month if you force a continuance. We do not have the ability to provide a beach access, a separate corridor, separate from the hotel egress, that would be dedicated as a beach access. And that's not going to change a month. And unfortunately, we have been trying to get this approved today simply because the owners are very anxious to move to construction, what everybody wants. They did everything they could to try to get a permit on the original 200-foot building and convert that to hotel as is, but functionally, it didn't work, so we spent 4 months coming through this board.
Everybody wants them to move forward. I think the board just wants as best a project as we can for Miami Beach. I would make a motion that we continue this, that the applicant works with staff to offer remedies for the public to access the beach and to offer improvements or tweaks, if you may, on the courtyard access. There was talk of the stair, making it more inviting. I think some further delineation here would help. So that's my motion to continue, and for the applicant to work with staff to show us, instead of just telling me in a rather authoritative manner, that without review, no, what you're saying is impossible. So that's my motion.
I'll second.
So there's a motion and a second.
Could I ask for clarification?
Yes.
Because you mentioned about working on some type of beach access. There's only one. It's either a core, and that's the only option that's available. Walking through the property is not an option.
Excuse me, but I'm not here to debate the design or design options. You're the attorney, right?
Yes, sir.
She's the architect?
Correct.
I'm just saying, I know as an architect that I'm not just going to say no. I'm always going to look at options, and maybe you're not. Maybe your world's just black and white, it's closed, but that's my motion. It's, you know, I'd like to see this come back. I really like the project. I have a history of fighting for North Beach, and I'll continue. And I appreciate all the effort that's gone into it, but I think that it's this board's responsibility to provide the best we can. And if you're just going to say no, then we're not going to work with the city, then I don't know.
That's not what we're saying.
So that's what I'm hearing. But
I think we've got a motion and a second.
On the table. So, I think it's been seconded.
And the motion, I can clarify, is to the April 14th meeting. 1 month. And if they're not ready, then we can, but I think we can.
And I think maybe we can give them a little, the first agenda item.
Yes.
I have no problem with that.
Do we need a roll call? Or?
It's not necessary.
Okay.
I'd like to just clarify where I stand. I think if we're going to be considering and giving them time to consider the design, particularly at the entrance, that the double doors into the garage, allowing in and out of 200 bicycles, I think that there's room for improvement there. There are loading spaces immediately behind that. It's not apparent to me how that's going to be resolved. I trust that it can be resolved. And if there's going to be more time, I think that's something that we'd be looking for. I personally would not insist that the private property owner provide public access. I wouldn't push that onto them personally. So that would be my only issue with going forward with this motion.
Okay, so...
Wait, before you call the question, I thought I heard you say that we do not have the privilege of forcing upon them the beach access. Repeat what you said.
Right, so you don't have the authority to require the property owner to basically hand over a property interest. These usually look, what the form these usually take is, for example, with the Baywalks, is that the property owners or the applicants proffer a condition that they will provide a Baywalk at the rear of their property. As I understand from the applicant, having listened to today's hearing, we don't have those circumstances here. The property owner is not proffering public beach access.
Okay, so how does that fit into us passing a motion that is requiring it?
Well, you're always free
requiring the staff.
That wasn't a requirement. My motion did not require, right. Did not make a requirement.
That was just a
my
comment.
Motion.
What else are you doing?
My motion was to work with staff and for the architect to offer ideas for it to happen.
Okay.
I wasn't requiring it. I want it to come back. Okay. I certainly want public access, as I think most people
here
have requested. But
if If they can do it, they can do it. But it seems to me that if we pass this, we are forcing it to come back with a design for...
It's certainly a hope.
I think that the way I read that motion was to direct the applicant to come back with a study of, and the board can correct me if I'm wrong, but with a study of whether it would be feasible to provide some sort of beach access. But I did not read the motion to mean that the board would be requiring the property owner to, either as an easement or some other instrument, to provide a beach access path.
Correct. Right. Okay, on the motion to continuance, all in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
So it's 5-1. It's continued.
Thank you.
Continued. No, for this application.
Jennifer and Alfredo, I have, if you want to pick up these, because we'll need them back pretty soon.
Don't we?
Board members have their application documents, maybe put them on the dais so the applicant can pick them up and reuse as much as possible.
Are we going to do the discussion item?
Yes. Okay. We have two discussion items currently on the agenda.
Yeah, that's how we do it. Here, you could carry two of these.
Sure. So, Nancy, this is your item, 5555 Collins Avenue. We briefly discussed this property at the last meeting, at the request of Ms. Liebman. I was able to get a little bit more information regarding our processes. So just a little bit of background. This is a building designed by Morris Lapidus. It is located on the east side of Collins Avenue. It is not located within any local historic district, and it is not an individually designated historic site at this time. It, therefore, is under the jurisdiction of the city's design review process. So we have two parallel processes, the Certificate of Appropriateness and Historic Preservation process, and then the design review process. So we look at every property in terms of a set of design criteria. In this instance, the design review criteria do include the review of public interior spaces that front onto a street or a right-of-way. However, since the criteria are not the same as yours, for example, the design review criteria does not contemplate demolition. I was able to confirm with the planning director, Tom Mooney, that we would review this in accordance with the design review criteria. However, it would not, making modifications to the lobby space would not necessarily rise to the design review board level. It would likely not require, it's very rare, and I'm not sure if we've even ever taken, there may have been one case where we would take a public interior to the design review board, again, because their criteria is much different than yours. If they were, for example, to create a solid wall along the entire, glass storefront of the lobby, that would be impacting the exterior and our transparency criteria, and that would likely have to go through the design review board. But changing the finishes and the furnishings and the ceiling moldings would not be something that would be reviewed by the design review board. So I did want to provide you with that update because we had some questions at the last time.
If the entire building were to be designated, how would that affect the interior?
So we have three types of designations: historic site, historic district, and historic single-family home. If this were to be proposed as a historic site, we would designate the property and include it, so the entire property would be under the jurisdiction of the city's historic preservation ordinance. The historic preservation ordinance regulates public interiors. Any significant changes to a public interior would require historic preservation board review. So anytime we designate a site, everything on that site is under the jurisdiction of the board. So that would, at that point, include the public interior space.
Well, since this meeting, we met with the people who understand the preservation aspect of this, and there are more and more of them who want to know more. So I feel like we can do this and forget about just the lobby and all of that. I believe that we can move forward with trying to get support for the designation of the building. I attended a meeting with them last night, and they talked about a lot of other things. And when the preservation issue came up, the eyes lit up and they were shaking their heads. The people who love that building, and there are many of them who have lived there many years, do not want to see changes to the Lapidus design. They have had recently, before I started coming to the board with this, they were moving ahead to modernize the whole building. And there was money sitting, waiting to do things. They had already hired designers. Well, that stopped when the board heard about designating.
Can I ask a question? So this building is Morris Lapidus Building, 5555 Collins. It's just north of the Morris Lapidus District, is
exactly.
That correct?
Exactly, exactly.
So in order to designate it, it can't be annexed into the Morris Lapidus District as a contributing structure. It has to go in as a site, a historic site.
I mean, both options are available.
It's a Morris Lapidus structure that just is barely outside of the
process for designation, regardless if it's an individual historic site or an expansion of a historic district, would be the same. So let me just read who can make this request. Requests for designation of an individual historic site or district may be made to the Historic Preservation Board by motion of the board, the city manager, by resolution of the planning board or city commission, by any property owner in respect to his or her own property, by a majority of property owners of record within a proposed historic district, by resolution of the county's Historic Preservation Board, or by resolution of any organization whose purpose is to promote the preservation of historic sites. So in the case of an individual historic site, you would need, that would be a good question, Nick. Maybe we need to talk about this. If it's a condominium, the code allows for any property owner in respect to his or her own property. Who would be considered the property owner of a condominium for the purposes of being allowed to submit a request for designation?
Well, the condo association is generally the entity that owns the common elements of the building. So I would think that whether you're talking about the parts of the building that are commonly owned or individually owned, you're probably going to need some application by the condo association. And then whatever voting requirement they have in place privately is their business. But I would think that for a condo association or a condominium property to initiate the designation of a structure on the property, that you would need the condo association to apply.
Oh, well, We have a meeting tomorrow night with, and Tom is coming, and Debbie, you're certainly welcome to come to discuss it with the, what the full board is invited, and the, well, all of the owners. There are 200 owners. You're saying that the only seven people who sit on the board are able to move the designation?
No, I mean, typically declarations of condominiums have a voting threshold for the association to take actions with regard to the property. So whatever that threshold may be, whatever approvals they need internally is sort of their business. But if the question is, how does a condominium property initiate its own designation, the answer would be we would need the condo association to file that application and sign the application. So if it's just a matter of under their docs, if it's a matter of just their board voting, then that's all that's required. But if it's a matter of the membership voting, that's a different story. I'm not familiar with the condo docs.
Okay, that's good to know. I thought it would probably be 50% of the owners.
It may be, but it depends on that's okay. Always provided for in the condo docs.
All right. I assume that Tom will be able to express all of that and give them courage. When I first raised this issue, they said, preservation? We don't want preservation. This was the board. So we went further and formed a group of people who are supporting it, and that's growing rapidly. So we'll continue to bring this back and give an update on it and hope that we can move forward. The board, I don't think, will support it individually, you know, the seven people, because they have already gone through the building. They've taken down some of the artwork. They're preparing to remodel. They call it modernizing. They are prepared to do that. They have thrown out the furniture that was existing in the public spaces. That's how, you know, we're not just doing an easy let's go designate Nancy, property. This is a quick battle.
Question. And so, just to follow up on Kirk's question, after stating the authority to apply for the designation, the district expansion would require the majority of property owners in that expanded area. So I think that would likely be a much higher threshold to obtain than just the one particular site ownership, because you do have several buildings between. The Lapidus District stops at 53rd Street, which is the parking lot. North of the parking lot, you have the fire station, and then you have several other condo buildings, I think maybe three. And then
they
have. So if we were to expand the district northward, the majority of property owners in that expanded area would agree, could agree and apply for that designation.
Well, is that required, or can't we?
The board, again, that is one route to apply. Typically, in this type of situation, it's more beneficial to have the property owners in agreement that they want the designation. But obviously, the board can apply. The planning board can send you a resolution to initiate the process. The city manager can do that. The county can do that. MDPL also has the authority to initiate that process.
Nancy, you mentioned that there are seven board members, but the majority of the building doesn't want to see the changes being done. Are there...
I don't think it's that way, because I think the whole board doesn't want to see major changes. They understand that it's an important building. It's new people who come who don't get it, but there are a lot who remain who have lived there since the building was built, practically. So I have confidence that we're going to be able to.
Yeah, no, I guess my question is if there's an election of the board coming up, maybe the
Not until October, but we know that. Well, a lot of work to do between now and then.
All right, Daniel, you wanted to say something.
Yes, hi, Daniel Serralda, Miami Design Preservation League. I wanted to say about a couple of things. First, the in order to initiate a designation, you were all talking about how it can happen, and if it comes from the owners, then there is a certain threshold. But you all as a board can initiate designation. I was so impressed by our newest member. I think I've been coming here for 10 years telling you guys your job is to designate. And so thank you, Barry, for mentioning the band shell. I mean, it's one of those that has been just waiting for any of you to do what you did. And so I give you a lot of credit for that. And just the same, it can be initiated by any members of this board. However, there is a political element when it comes to a condominium. So I'm coming to that meeting. I have it on my calendar. We have to convince...
Tomorrow night at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, we have to convince the condo owners that it's the right thing to do. So one thing I wanted to recommend is that I think it'd be good to know the FAR, how much FAR is built on that site, because I believe that building was built before the downzoning, Debbie. I don't know if you've ever done an analysis, but I have a strong feeling that if that building were demolished, they would not be able to rebuild the same size. So when you start talking to them in those sort of avenues about like what is allowed, you know, it's not as scary, I think, for them to think about designation. And also it does not impact the inside of their residences, right? It's only the lobby.
Correct. It's right. The exterior of the property and the public interior spaces only.
Yeah. So I think tomorrow, like what I'll do, hopefully if they let me, is I'll explain to them, like, it only really applies to the lobby, which I've been to that building. I don't know if you all have been, but it's a very cool Morris Lapidus lobby. It has amazing features. And I think we could probably convince the residents that it is something worthy of designation, and that, you know, if they were to sell to, like, George Perez, he could only build maybe a quarter of what's there now. So I think we could sell it to them and hopefully get their support, but I just wanted to make those comments. Thank you.
There was one issue that I brought up when they were asking questions. This was a two-hour discussion, and the issue that got involved somehow was the economics of what's going on here in, Miami Beach, probably in all of the United States. And I pointed out that the economics, when historic buildings are designated and are purchased, there's a big difference between Collins Avenue and South Beach. South Beach is thriving because of the economics is keeping them going, and they're thriving because people love the historic district. We don't celebrate the historic district that exists up there. It's Morris Lapidus buildings that are designated and are part of that neighborhood, and nobody celebrates it as historic buildings. They just celebrate them as what they are. This will be the first time that a residential building would be designated in that area, and it would certainly add to the economy just based on what it is. It's a beautiful site. It's worth going in there, whether you're going to look at
But the Seacoast is also a residential building, 5151.
Is it still? I think it's partial.
Condo, the Alexander, right? The McCurham building?
Yes, residential. Yes, that is. That is.
Just out of curiosity, since this is a discussion item, by majority vote of the property owners, which is one of the... Has that happened? Has it ever happened in this city that process has been the route to?
We have in the past have a significant number of property owners approach the city for historic district designation.
I don't even know how you facilitate that. I mean, does the city, How do you even facilitate a vote of all the property
I don't know
owners?
If we've ever had 50% of property owners in a proposed historic district actually make the application, but we have been approached. Remember back in the 90s, the Palm View, we were approached by a good number of residents at that point. Now, there's other issues. There were zoning issues at the time as well. But that has happened. I actually met with a group of single-family homeowners a few years ago that was a large group that wanted to come in to talk about designation of a district as well. So it does happen. I mean, I don't think of an example that they've actually filed the application and gone through with it. But it's, you know, obviously it wouldn't be in the code if it wasn't possible.
And in this instance, it's the same board or the same procedures, I would assume, for a condo to move forward with a renovation as it would be to designate, correct?
That, and again, owner. To go back on what Nick said, I think that would be up to the condo documents, the legal documents, how many, what percentage of the owners they would need to file the application.
Unless by analogy that requirement for property owners to initiate the designation of the district, that it's a majority of property owners, I mean, maybe that would be the requirement that would apply by analogy. We'd have to look at that.
But in this case, it's not a district. We're not making a district.
I know, yeah. I know, but I think it might be helpful since a condominium is a shared ownership model. That I wonder if by analogy that threshold might apply. It's something for us to think about internally.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the process that we did for the International Inn, and when it came here and they didn't want to be designated, and it was stated on the record that we could designate it without. Is that because it was a single owner?
No. So just to be clear, owner consent for historic site and historic district designation is not required.
Right.
Right.
It's preferred, which is one of the reasons why we've delayed the International Inn. It's preferred to have owner consent because it's not a unilateral decision by this board whether to designate or not. It is more of a political process. So the planning department prefers when we have at least a significant amount of support for that type of designation. There's been instances where we have not had support from the property owners, and those designations were not adopted. So that is one of the reasons why staff, you know, really, really works when we have a proposed designation with property owners to try mm-hmm. to get a consensus. You know, maybe you never get 100%, and we certainly have historic districts that were challenged. But on the other side, we also had property owners that supported that. So that's really, I think, a significant component of designation is a consensus of property owners.
When is that coming back here?
I don't have a date for that. That will not be coming back here. The Historic Preservation Board did recommend approval of the formal designation report.
So that's
the
finished.
Next step would be the planning board for the designation.
For the designation, right.
Oh, okay.
So can I ask, what's the objective, I mean, outside of public knowledge and you know, sharing information that this discussion is happening? Is there something we're hoping to move forward with?
Yes, it's a designation of 5555.
So that's the request.
That
is a request to happen.
It started out as a request to just designate the public spaces. And our city does not condone that kind of designation. So now we have to go for the full building. And when, as Daniel described, you have all of the people there who would have to understand, what are they going to do with the building? Why would they be not wanting to alter a building like this? And, you know, you get involved in that discussion.
So are you requesting that the board move forward with... I'm not 100% clear on... I'm curious to see. I haven't seen the pool area of this. All the public spaces. This meeting is happening tomorrow. Is this the sort of thing where...
This is a meeting of the people in the building.
Right, which is to make them all aware.
To make them aware that preservation, and you know from being on a preservation board and going out in the public, a lot of people have a fear of historic preservation. It's going to damage something.
I understand. I'm just trying to understand the timeline of what the expectation is. Is the expectation that we put this on the agenda and invite people that come to that meeting to come here?
It's not
that we
time
go ahead
yet.
And start studying?
Not time.
This was requested by Nancy to kind of discuss the process and the options. And no, I don't have any plan to request that the property owner come as a whole.
No. One of the property owners, actually the leader of the group, not the president, but the person who's been pulling this together in the building, he came last time and he spoke about it. And from, I think you weren't here last time, were you?
Yes, I was here. It just ran very long.
In your heart.
No, I was here. It just ran very long, that meeting.
Were you here for that? So why are you asking me what we're doing?
Because that was one component that ran very late.
It wasn't because of the building that it ran late.
Right. So in terms of nurturing the process, based on what you said, Debbie, and trying to bring everyone into the fold and doing it in a positive way, what would be the next steps to nurture that process forward?
It's not something that the city would get involved with. I mean, we're here to provide the factual information, to answer questions about historic designation. But in terms of encouraging or discouraging, that's not the role of the city to do at this point.
What was the role of the city? You mentioned it before, that they could write a resolution or write something.
So the board can make recommendations.
Okay.
You could make a recommendation to the planning board or to the city commission to designate. The board can initiate the designation on a vote. So the board today could vote to have staff prepare something. I wouldn't recommend that this particular case because I think the important component is to discuss it with as many property owners in the building as you can, provide them the information, and see if there's interest there. Any of the property owners, any property owner throughout the city is always welcome to reach out to the planning department to discuss more if they have some technical questions. And I know Tom Mooney is a great resource as well as our planning director about not only the process of designation, but what happens after it's designated. What does that change? What does that mean? You know, that's really the planning department's role at this point, because we have not been directed or received an application for the designation.
Okay.
We passed a resolution, some kind of resolution at the last board meeting.
Do we have that in the after action?
While Debbie's looking through the after action, just because there have been a couple comments about a public meeting this week, I want to remind the board that while you may be individually supportive or opposed to a particular community issue, on this particular item, you would be sitting as a quasi-judicial board, and you would be ruling on on the designation, your recommendation on the designation. So just be mindful that, one, both the Sunshine Law would apply if two or more of you appear at that community meeting. You'd be prohibited from speaking to each other about the proposed designation. And second, any communications you have with a third party, including your communications with the condo owners or the association, would need to be disclosed at the public hearing on the proposed designation. I just want you all to be mindful of that, because it is something that would come before you at some point.
Hopefully. And just, Nancy, you're correct. At the March meeting, the board approved a motion adopting an expression of support regarding the retention of original historical fabric within the public interior spaces of the building located at 5555 Collins Avenue, as these spaces are an important part to the historic fabric of the city. That motion was made by John Stewart and seconded by Nancy and was adopted. Now, this resolution didn't have necessarily a place to go, so it was just a general recommendation. It wasn't directed at any specific entity. It was in a general expression of support.
Okay.
So at this point, we'll let the process play out and see where what they do in the building.
I will bring
and
back
when there's
what they're
movement,
doing.
You'll let us know, and then we'll move forward then.
Is it possible to have a copy of that resolution?
It's published in the after action.
Oh.
So you have it in your book, and it's online. It's also published online.
Well, I have it. Okay.
Are we finished with?
Go ahead.
I just had one. I wanted to actually tag on to what Barry actually brought up at the beginning of the meeting, which I didn't want to pull us off track. But with the discussion of the band shell, I just wanted to ask, might it not make sense just to include the Normandy Fountain as part of that discussion as well? I mean, my understanding, the band shell's already had, you know, the canopy that's finished. It's also my understanding that the design plans for the fountainscape have been approved and are moving forward. The property has been fenced, which has led to a lot of people wondering what's going on. And I'm just wondering, could there possibly be any reason why we wouldn't just include the fountain as well as two city-owned icons of North Beach and just proceed with both of them? And it was your motion, Barry, so I don't want to, you know, I don't want to water it down or bifurcate it or whatever. I just wanted to bring it up because it just seems so obvious to me that both of those structures should be designated.
Well, I took the the band shell as one because it's a post-war MIMO piece of architecture. And it was something I wanted to do, and someone who I refer to as someone who plants ideas, Don Worth, put in my head that I could do that here. So I did. I think I would want to take them separately. I think if you wanted to take, is that called the Levi?
I guess what I wanted to add, and I respect that, obviously, and I'm just wanted to ask staff or anyone else, is there any reason why we wouldn't try to just nurture that forward since the you know, we're getting a new streetscape design, the fountain's going to be as shiny and beautiful as it could possibly be, so why not just
have
that protection?
Yeah, and in a similar fashion to the band shell, the city, you know, years ago, and I was involved in this probably close to 10, 15 years ago, we did look at all of the city monuments. So all of our fountains, all of our monuments, some are designated, some are not. That didn't move forward, but we can certainly bring that. I would recommend it as well as a separate application. We can look at the Normandy Fountain. And we can talk about that at the next meeting. So if
could I make a motion to just to move to that as
that
a separate
as
item,
a
the exploration?
Item? The April meeting?
Please.
Okay.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, so that'll be added as well. And our
you have one more discussion item. Max Litt, one of our newer board members, did request a discussion on the sea level rise criteria. And I'm so thankful that Rogelio Madon from the planning department was able to come by this morning. Is it still morning? Yeah. Rogelio is the chief of community development and resilience. Sustainability for the planning department. So he is intimately involved in the crafting of the sustainability ordinances, also some of the landscape ordinances that have been passed in an effort to enhance the city's resiliency. And he's also very familiar with these criteria. So basically, I know these criteria, I don't know, remember when, and I can just let Rogelio speak, but several years ago, the criteria were adopted. Recently, they, I believe, were modified and expanded upon, and staff does delineate every single criteria in your staff report. And I think, Max, if you want to kind of explain, you had some questions about how are these really being looked at by staff.
Yeah, that's right. I asked for the discussion item to talk more about the analytical process that goes into how you address the criteria. And, you know, in the staff report, we get the one or two word, you know, applicable, satisfied, not applicable. In a lot of cases, I think, you know, I would come to the same conclusion, but then there are some that haven't been so obvious. And an example that comes to mind is that it doesn't seem like there would ever be a project where the criterion about considering the climate compact sea level rise projections would ever be not applicable, you know, for example. So really just, yeah, I wanted to probe into the process, who's involved in the analysis, and what goes on behind the staff report.
Really, maybe just a little background, because I think I can answer a lot of these questions on how, you know, why these criteria were put in and the background behind that would be helpful. Thank you.
So the criteria was adopted in 2017, and then we updated it last year to add the criteria on the heat island effect. And as we get additional ideas incorporated into the code, we update these standards. And a lot of these criteria are actually addressed within the land development regulations themselves, and we're actually actively working towards furthering these ideas. We have an item going to the Land Use and Sustainability Committee next month to address actual raising of floors as buildings are substantially upgraded and redeveloped, and also new construction that they have their floors set at higher levels. So some of these criteria are actually addressed in the land development regulations, but we really want applicants to look at this information and at these ideas before, as they're planning their project, before they get to the building permit level, at which case they're going to try to be fitting in all of these code requirements into a project that's already basically been hashed out. We want them to consider these things up front. So one of our requirements is that all of the letters of intent for all developments, that they address the sea level rise and resiliency criteria. So the applicants are the ones that are looking at this and addressing these issues before the projects even come before the board. So a lot of it's up to them. In the case of historic preservation, the building's already there, so raising the building is difficult in many cases with concrete floors. Historic public interiors have historic floor. They may have a terrazzo floor that we don't want to change significantly, so raising that floor is going to be difficult. So we look at these on a case-by-case basis. So,
yeah, thank you. That's very helpful. So that was a good point. So, yes, as part of the application requirements, the applicant is required to respond to these criteria in a narrative form in his letter or her letter of intent. Now, for larger projects, We have recently instituted what we call a development review committee. So on the very initial submittal of plans, which may not be 100% complete, but complete enough for us to review, we then assign those to the city's Public Works Department for review, the Environment and Sustainability Department, as well as the Building Department, the Fire Department, you know, depending on the scope of the project, sometimes the Police Department will also be assigned to review plans. The Urban Forester is now reviewing the majority of these plans before they get to you. At that point, we are requesting that all of those departments go ahead and issue some comments. And that's all done through this very complex online portal system where the applicant can then go in and see all of the comments that were issued by all of these other departments. And part of that is at the end of the review and comments, we meet collaboratively. So we'll have everyone in the same room from the different departments who have looked at the plans, as well as the applicant, to go over some of our concerns. So staff does draft the responses to these conditions, but they're based on some input from some other departments at times. Now, in terms of the applicability of some of these, the board, because of the nature of the historic preservation ordinance, often the board will see a minor modification to a public interior. Someone wants to put a bar, and I guess I'll use the bar analogy. I don't know what I'm thinking this morning. But the bar in the lobby, that would come to the board because of the nature of the limitations on what staff can review. In my opinion, that doesn't need a lot of analysis in terms of the South Florida Climate Compact. An exterior bar, an outdoor bar, same would be the same issue. That has to go to the board. There are a lot of applications that come to the board for signage if they want special types of signage or they're exceeding what they're normally permitted to do. There are a lot of artistic graphics that are required to come to this board. Those are the types of applications that, in my opinion, and as well as the telecommunication applications, you know, I don't know if the new board members haven't experienced those yet, but we'll often have 10 of those on an agenda. That we would also, you know, say it would not be applicable. Additions, new construction, I believe was the intent,
yes,
for the vast majority of these criteria, that if you're going to be increasing the intensity of a property in terms of adding more square footage, then we really need to look at this stuff more carefully. Especially, you know, how I review them is really on a scale, kind of a sliding scale. If someone's adding a small ground level addition because they need an air conditioned trash room for the restaurant they want to put in their historic lobby, I wouldn't then jump to criteria 8 and say, well, you didn't show me if you can raise your historic building. You didn't provide the engineering information so I can evaluate if the existing building can be raised because of the scope of the project. Now, if they came in with substantial demolition and, you know, a rooftop addition and then an 8-story ground level addition, then we would be requesting more information from the applicant regarding, okay, you're doing all this new construction, that's great. However, have you thought about the historic building? How can we get the historic building to be more resilient? And that's when we start looking at additional engineering information about the feasibility of lifting it, of flood-proofing it, of changing, you know, changing the use of it perhaps so that it can flood. So that's how we're approaching things, Max. I know it's, you know, the Historic Preservation Board is lucky in the fact that you have the most criteria of any land use board in the city, I think you have close to 50, over 40 criteria. So, and that's including the sea level, the 12 sea level rise criteria. So we don't get in our staff report, unless it's project specifically has an issue with one of these, as in depth as, you know, we may want to. And a lot of these are things that are eventually reviewed at building permit, and like Rogelio said, which is exactly true, a lot of these have also found their way into our zoning land development regulations. So that some of them are actually requirements. The cool paving, porous paving, that is part of the heat island ordinance. Criteria 10, water retention system shall be provided. That's not only, one of the criteria, but that's also a requirement that's reviewed by the building department and public works department at time of building permit. No, you can't, you have to retain your water on site for new construction. You can't dump it into the city system. So this is still relatively new for us. We're trying to get more input from the other departments to provide some more technical information. And any suggestions this board might have and how we can do this better, or if you think criteria needs to be added or removed, that's something you can recommend, and that can be recommended to the planning board and the city commission, that they start looking at this for maybe future changes.
Is there something produced or could be produced where these are all in some kind of neat little booklet or something so that it's easy enough? When I came on the board, I was given the big loose leaf book with things in it, but I don't think what you're talking about is in there.
Well, we give you, every new board member gets a set of the criteria, and this wouldn't have been in there, because when you came onto the board, I don't believe these were not adopted yet. We do include them in every single staff report.
No, I know that, but just for a person who's coming on for the first time, or for our, just something that doesn't have to be dragged around, that we have enough to drag around with, so that we would have it, some kind of little booklet with the new update or with all of them, since there are so many.
There are so many.
It would help. It would help. I mean, I would just call you, because I would never be able to find it in all of that stuff. But I think that a clear cut, this is what it is. This is what you're required to do. Maybe it would relieve us of some of the people who come in here with these atrocious ideas that they want to do, and it could be spelled out. I don't know if it's all clear enough to spell out that way.
Yeah, I mean, the tricky part is it is really, like everything we do is a case-by-case basis in terms of which of these criteria really need to be explored more in depth. It's really on a per project basis. We try to be consistent, and we've had those discussions with some recent projects regarding floodproofing or trying to elevate properties. The board has approved a couple projects that required a certain level of floodproofing, and that also recent one that required the building to be elevated. And we're going to be seeing more of that type of thing.
You remember the exercise we had a couple of months ago where we were changing some of the rules, zoning rules,
yes,
that were applicable. And they came in a very, they were easy to read, easy to understand. Otherwise, I guess we can run down and see Rahalia. That's a question.
No. I mean, that's a good idea because I know Rogelio is working on, there's been recent adoption of some resiliency sustainability ordinances, and I know we're going to be constantly changing that and updating that and adding to that. So I think that might be a good idea when we do propose a change that we present that to the board. And I think that would be very helpful. Like this heat island ordinance, I don't think that was presented here. And that would be really good because that's the type of information that should be helping this board make decisions. So we can definitely do that.
Right.
Yeah.
Otherwise, dragging that big.
And roofing materials, you know, now we were encouraging, if not requiring, sustainable roofing, green roofs, blue roofs, solar roofs, and those types of things have actually made it into the code. Now, they're not a requirement in all instances, but it is something that I think would inform board comments and board decision over time. So, Nancy, I think that's a really good idea. We will keep you updated, and any ordinance kind of put together a little easy-to-understand kind of summary.
But just a simple list without everything else.
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea.
I just wanted to mention a couple of things. This is a discussion item, and you know, I think our approach to historic preservation and sea level rise are evolving. At least that's how I see it. And I just want to keep reiterating this because, and I learned this, a lot of this, through the exploration of the North Beach and Normandy, the North Shore and Normandy local historic districts and the zoning overlays and the conservation districts. And, you know, in that regard, where all of these components were a part of that discussion, in addition to, you know, requirements, zoning requirements, like you mentioned, Nancy, I think it's beneficial to not only to have try to use proper wording here, you know, incentives, incentivizing and making, educating people about incentives for making historic structures resilient. I think it's important that incentives exist for historic structures to make it feasible. It's still, you know, when I particularly when I see there was a Facebook post of a building in Iowa, a streamlined two-story masonry building that the city wanted to save, and the water was rising. I guess it was on one of the rivers in Iowa, and the city bought it and moved it, actually, to higher ground. But we don't see that happening, particularly with, you know, those similar style, you know, two-story rectangular masonry buildings, which comprises so much of the architectural language here of our historic properties. And I mean, obviously, in the future, you know, you'd like to see a path where that actually begins to happen in the real world, you know, that it's or financially viable to elevate buildings. The other thing I wanted to bring up, which comes up sometimes in these discussions with projects, and I want to reiterate it here, is finding the middle ground between the Department of the Interior standards and how that, I guess, reconciles with what our vision is for preserving buildings and making them resilient. I still always feel a little bit strange when we have a project that comes along that's actually saving a building but not actually, or saving portions of a building but not actually activating it, which always makes me feel during those projects that we hadn't really found the ideal balance. So I just want to reiterate those while we're having the general discussion, since I bring up those considerations when it comes to individual projects.
And on a kind of related to that, there's a Department of Interior guideline specific to resilience and historic buildings. I don't know if, how the timing of that lines up with the sea level rise and resilience criteria that we consider. I did like a quick review. I wouldn't call myself an expert in that, but it looked like the guidelines were more general than what we would apply locally. But it might be worth a look if that wasn't on staff's radar too, just to consider that as a source for criteria and processes.
Yeah. So Jake and I did attend the webinar. We received an early copy. And it is very general. Maybe not all of it's going to be applicable. Hopefully they will be coming out with their illustrative set of guidelines. Right now it's all in narrative form. They're planning. Do you remember, Jake, when they said they were coming up with the illustrative actual book, like the old Secretary of Interior standards? I think that's going to be available shortly, and I think that's a worthwhile presentation to give to the board when we do get the new guidelines to present that to you. It is important to note that the Shulman study that I know, Barry and Max, you were not here when that was presented to the board. That was done, and that was, you know, we consulted with the state SHPO office, the SHPO office that is part of, you know, the National Park Service channel. And they were generally supportive of what we're doing. My discussions with the National Park Service and SHPO is everybody's kind of waiting to see what local governments do. You know, over the past 3, 4, 5 years, you know, when I'm attending conferences or talking to folks from the Park Service, they understand that their interior standards need to be modified, but they're hesitant to modify them in a dramatic way before they see what local governments, how we start to respond. So, you know, that's a good point, and I should keep you guys more posted on what's happening at the state and national level with that.
And what is the status of Alan Shulman's plan? Is it still in the works?
Yes, so this board did support the concepts of it. That has not yet been presented at the commission. That is going to be presented at the March commission meeting. I think it's March 18th. Nick, do you have that date?
I believe, yeah.
For the commission's, you know, information, as well as, you know, whether or not the commission is generally acceptive of
it's
it.
The 18th.
Right. It's the 18th.
Now, a lot of the things, going back to what Kirk brought up, in the Shulman study, you know, deal with building form and urban form. But then at the end, there was that piece regarding incentives and incentivization. The vast majority of the incentives will likely require separate processes, meaning if you're going to change a use or if you're going to increase height or if you're going to allow rooftop additions where rooftop additions are not currently permitted. All of that would take a separate legislative track. Anything with FAR, just I know everyone in the room understands this, but for anyone watching, anything increasing the amount of square footage would require a legislative process and approval of the voters in a general election. So the incentive piece, for the most part, would be the one that would be broken off and discussed more specifically, more individually from the Shulman plan. The planning department is also going to be going through a code change. Part of that process, and Rogelio, I know, has been involved in this. I think we're still negotiating with the consultant that was selected to mm-hmm. do that. But part of their job is also going to be to look at the Shulman study and try to incorporate the concepts that were outlined in that set into any new code as well. But again, each one of those pieces will be debated in a public forum and would be more in-depth than what was provided in the Shulman study.
It just boggles my mind to how many studies and how many things in the past, well, since I'm here, that have come. We have the ULI with a plan. Harvard did a plan. I don't know how many plans. And somehow Alan Shulman's plan seems to stand above all of that.
Well, that was a plan that was commissioned by the city. The other ones were private groups that offered their services that came in to look at things. We've had more than just Harvard. I think Columbia University has been here. I know UM and FIU have also looked at the city. So the Shulman plan was commissioned by the city and is specific to our historic districts. That is the only one that has specific information about our historic districts and a path forward for resiliency. So that is the one, and that had some real concrete examples and suggestions about, okay, this is what you do, but how do we incentivize you to do this?
That's right. He went the extra mile and really clarified it, and his presentations were wonderful. But are we sticking with that? Well, we're still open to...
So the commission is going to hear the presentation and weigh in. I mean, ultimately, any set of design guidelines does go through city commission approval.
So
this board made a strong recommendation, and then we'll see on March 18th what the commission, what they feel, if we should move forward in that direction or not.
Or just keep collecting plan after plan. And I get, I don't know if you all get, but I get all kinds of mail from the UEL because I might have been at a meeting one time wanting me to join and do all this stuff. And I really wonder why they're making such an effort when we have a great plan with Ellen Shulman. So hopefully it'll pass, is what you're telling me.
We are recommending that it be endorsed, yes.
And then what would the next steps be from there? On both?
That would be published
tracks, right?
As the guidelines, right? And then the next steps, because in order to effectuate a lot of the things that are in his plan, we would require code changes. Those would come as individual items. We can update the board when those are going through because this board, although a recommending body, is not a formal entity in terms of the legislative process for the vast majority of ordinances. So, for example, if we wanted to allow rooftop additions in Flamingo Park, a one-story rooftop addition, that would be an ordinance change. That would go through the referral process, it would go through planning board, and it would go through city commission at two readings. We can bring that to you as well for you to get, you know, to weigh in and take a look at it. Anything affecting historic districts, typically we do bring to you to weigh in and give any recommendations. So that's just one example that, yes, it would be, it's, you know, think of it as a tree with the tree trunk being the report and then all these branches coming off, which would be the different things required for each component of the plan.
Are there any proactive steps at that point that the board could be taking to stay ahead rather than responding to? And again, you know, I think of an easy reference for me. Was the Hohauser structure on 16th Street, again, with the zoning where we had to elevate a part of the building, demolish most of it, rebuild the part that was demolished because of the zoning code, not because it needed to be demolished.
And that, right. So, I mean, there are, you know, this board can, we can always have a discussion item, and this board can always make recommendations to the planning board and the city commission, urging them to look at a certain section of the land development regulations and make changes. In terms of the resiliency, right now I think we want to see what the city commission does because it's not clear to me right now if the Shulman plan really outlined development that can be resilient development that can be done with existing buildings and historic districts. That requires zoning changes. But the plan also tied those to resiliency. So, yes, you can do a rooftop addition in Flamingo Park, but then you have to do all of these resilient things to your building, or else you don't get that. So a lot of the it's multi-layered because some of the suggestions may require additional code changes or a referendum if we're going to be talking about extra square footage. So it's unlikely that we would just make zoning changes saying, okay, well, now you can build 200 feet in Flamingo Park without it being tied to, yes, you can do a rooftop addition if you do these 10 things to make your building more resilient. Or, you know, another example, yes, you can add more square footage than is allowed now if the voters approve that. But in order to do that, you have to do all these resilient things. It's not just a free-for-all where we're giving things out. You have to perform the function of making your building resilient. So there's still a lot of moving parts. This is, you know, this was a long process, but we're, you know, believe it or not, we're much further ahead than the vast majority of the country on this. So I know it seems like it's forever, and it's going to take a lot longer to get all of this straightened out, but we are much further ahead than almost any historic community that I'm aware of in this country.
Mr. Chair, yes, Daniel Seraldo, MDPL. I just want to make a couple comments. I agree we are much more ahead than other places. I think one thing we all have to realize when we see the river flooding in other places, that is the majority of flooding that is happening now in our historical buildings in the U.S. is river flooding. And so we're kind of, in a weird way, lucky because our issues of sea level rise are a little bit more down the road than the river flooding that's happening right now, especially in the Midwest. But hurricanes are a real serious issue that we have to look into. I just want to mention with the Shulman study, there are a lot of solutions from very basic things to very large things. So I think that as the public is more educated on what are the different levels of solutions, whether it's, you know, backflow preventers or lifting up your AC, you know, little incremental resiliency improvements, that they're going to then be able to make their resilient path forward. Resiliency is not going to be for everyone. There's people that I know, I grew up here, that have decided, you know what, my risk profile right now and where I'm at in my life, I'm not really wanting to live on a barrier island that's prone to sea level rise. And, you know, that is okay. But for those that do want to stay and invest, we have to offer a whole host of solutions, a whole toolbox to look at. So I would just say that, yes, it's true. Right now, the whole city isn't being lifted up. But, you know, give it some time. We're not being flooded today, in spite of what some people might say. But we are really, I think, very ahead of many other places. And I do thank the city, and I want to make a quick plug that we at MDPL have our own Center for Resiliency and Sustainability. We'll be having our fourth annual workshop that's all focused on properties and making them resilient. That will be April 25th. And we have some really exciting speakers, but I can't announce it yet. But hopefully, you know, you all can attend. And all of those also, the last 4 years, are all online on our YouTube. And we get phone calls regularly from people who have viewed the videos from different experts, engineers, planners, municipal government officials, FEMA officials. So we are really building a nice toolbox, but it's going to require more work and more input from the community. But even these resiliency criteria were something that the development community and the preservation community wanted to put into these Certificate of Appropriateness reports, because we think it's important for everyone to know, to be very clear, here's where the sea is going, you know your risk, you know, and that's an important factor in making your planning. So thank you.
Okay. If there's nothing else, Max?
Yeah. Just thank you. I appreciate the discussion. And I think one of the things that I was maybe fishing for in going with it that I feel has been addressed is just a couple things. One, that the treatment of the applicant responses aren't just taken as fact, but that's a starting point, right? And mm-hmm. I lost my train of thought on the other part, but I think just a point on with so much in a case-by-case determination, just to hit home the importance of process with it, then that there are certain, that there are just is a consistent way of going about the review, even if it's applied, you know, with the specifics on the particulars of a site. So thank you again. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Rogelio.
You're
always welcome here.
Excellent.
Second Tuesday of every month.
Oh, you got me here.
All right. I think we're adjourned.